Good morning. It is 9:01, and I'll call this special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Chief of Staff Nick Lajewski, will you please take roll?
Chair Brooks.
Here.
Vice Chair Goodman.
Here.
Regent Arascotta. Yeah. Regent Batista. Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brager.
Here, aye.
Regent Brown.
Present.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Downs.
Here.
Regent Fernandez.
Present.
Regent Goicoechea.
Present in GBC.
Regent McGrath.
Here.
You have a quorum present.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Regent Brager, will you please lead us in the pledge?
Certainly. Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'll now move to agenda item number one, which is public comment. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 992-847-53091 and passcode 555-555. Is there any public comment at GBC?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you. We'll move to public comment here in Las Vegas.
Hi, good morning, Stacy Walters. I'm here on agenda item six. I'm president of the Nevada Faculty Alliance and a proud member of AFL-CIO. I want to tell you about some of our students. Students you may not realize you already serve. Right now, over 3,000 building trade apprentices are enrolled at CSN and TMCC, working toward associate degrees and certificates of achievement. They're taking math classes to calculate load-bearing requirements. They're sitting in our classrooms, learning blueprint, reading, and construction codes. Our faculty work directly with union training directors to develop curriculum and serve on programmatic advisory councils. These union apprenticeship programs are part of INCHI's educational mission, providing debt-free pathways to family-sustaining careers with healthcare, retirement, and nationally recognized credentials. But when construction contracts get negotiated without building trade partnerships or community workforce agreements, our students get shut out of their own campuses while out-of-state labor gets brought in. This board has the authority to ensure that that doesn't happen. You can require that capital project contracts align with INCHI's educational mission, and you can ask the hard question about who's building these projects and whether those partnerships create opportunities for the students we're training. These aren't just construction projects. They're workforce development opportunities. Every building should advance our students' careers and not bypass them. I'm asking you to exercise oversight. Hold your partners and project managers accountable to outcomes that serve Nevada students. Building trade unions and INCHI faculty, they're already partners in education. Let's make sure your capital projects reflect that partnership. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm a citizen of Nevada, retiree of 872. My experience living next door to a public charter school that was built non-union, I noticed it was an old building. I questioned asbestos. Asbestos exposure, I called the county. The county turned around and was at the building all day long. Next day, it was plastic off so there wouldn't be asbestos going into the environment. Another time, there was concrete being poured in a residential neighborhood in which I filed an incident report because I wanted to bust bones. And so I sat on a rock because I didn't want to look like a bad person. Then I see these painters on the second floor, one standing on plastic spraying, and two of them laying out plastic, and they didn't even have a safety apparatus. So I called OSHA. OSHA gave the contractor violations. When it come to the substructure of the building, there were shortcuts. If they were to take core samples out of it, they would find that they didn't build the building according to engineer specs. And hopefully I don't get in trouble for exposing this, but thank you. That's my experience, and I prefer work and the money to stay to keep America's, to keep Nevada's family working, give them food in their bellies, and enough money so they can wear the a proper attire and have the proper nutrition in their bodies. Thank you. I'm a little nervous. I'm not used to public speaking, but thank you for the opportunity.
Sir, yes. Before can you state your name for the record, please? Thank
my
you.
My name is Lauren Graves. Thank you. Retiree of Local 872. Thank you.
Good morning, Board of Regents and everyone present today. My name is Trey Curtis Brown, for the record. I'm the incoming GPSA president, newly elected, and I just wanted to take a moment to say hello, welcome, and thank you all for your hard work that you've been doing. I'm definitely looking forward to our partnerships that we have over the next year together, and for all the regents I have met with, thank you for the great collaboration and welcome into this role. And for those that I haven't had a chance to meet yet, I look forward to working with you all and seeing how we can collaborate, and go Rebels. Thank you all.
Good morning, members of the Board of Regents. My name is Joseph Franco, and I'm a union organizer with LIUNA Local 872. I'm speaking today regarding Agenda Item 6 concerning the 2027 to 2029 capital construction requests. At LIUNA 872, we take immense pride in our building, Southern Nevada. But right now, we're seeing many NSHE projects being built using non-signatory and non-local labor. While highly trained local Nevadans workers are left sitting at the sidelines. Our core message today is simple. Nevada public projects should create Nevada careers, correct? What often gets overlooked in these project and budget requests in the Nevada building trades apprentices are NSHE students. Our apprentices attend classes, complete classwork, and participate in accredited programs while working in the field. Building trades apprenticeship programs invest millions of private dollars every single year into workforce training at absolutely no cost to the taxpayers. In return, we provide debt-free education, healthcare, retirement, and benefits in family-sustaining careers. When NSHE excludes building trade partnerships and labor agreements, you're defranchising your very own students and limiting their career opportunities of working in Nevadans. NSHE should be creating pathways for students to stay and work in Nevada, not importing out-of-state laborers while local apprentices struggle to find opportunities. The solution is utilizing community workforce agreements. These partnerships with the building trades guarantee local hiring, safer job sites, high workforce standards, and on-time delivery. Public dollars must support Nevada workers, Nevada families, and Nevada apprenticeship programs. If NSHE is serious about workforce development and student success, then organized labor must have a seat at the table. These projects are not just buildings. They're vital opportunities to develop the next generation of Nevada's skilled workforce. So again, my name is Joseph Franco, and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Board. Thank you guys for having me here. I'm here to talk about agenda item number 6. Good afternoon, Regents. My name is Aron Ibarra with the Southern Nevada Building Trades Unions. I want to first acknowledge that I don't believe any of these issues come from ill intent. I understand many of these development structures and lease agreements may simply reflect how business has historically been done, but I believe it is important to recognize the real consequences these decisions have on Nevada workers and, more importantly, NSHE students. We have serious concerns regarding lease agreement language tied to the new Nevada State University campus project that appears designed to avoid classification as a public work. When public projects are structured this way, prevailing wage standards can be bypassed and apprenticeship utilization requirements are avoided. For the building trades, this is not just a labor issue, it's a student issue. Over 3,500 registered apprentices in Southern Nevada are also NSHE students through CSN. These apprentices rely on job hours to graduate, advance their education, and build career in Nevada's middle class. The Apprenticeship Utilization Act was created specifically to ensure public-supported projects contribute to workforce development and create opportunities for apprentices to gain the hours and experience necessary to succeed. When loopholes are used to avoid these standards, The result is not just lower wage standards for local workers, it is fewer opportunities for students that this system is supposed to support. At a time when Nevada continues to talk about workforce pipelines, economic mobility, and supporting students, we should not create structures that sideline the very apprentices we are encouraging to enroll in these programs. We simply ask the board to carefully evaluate these agreements and consider whether they align with the mission of NSHE, the interest of Nevada taxpayers, and the long-term success of your students. At its core, we're just concerned with the... I'm a North Las Vegas resident. I was incredibly excited to see that we're going to be getting a campus in North Las Vegas for Nevada State University. But the issue is that when you're circumventing prevailing wage, when you're circumventing public works, you're also disenfranchising the 3,500 students that you guys are supposed to be serving through the apprenticeship programs we have through CSN. So that is the main reason why we're here, and we hope you guys can take that into consideration. Thank you.
Good morning, chair, members of the chair, and various administrators from our institutions. My name is Randall Dannen, D-A-N-N-E-N, and I'm here today alongside other postdoctoral scholars. Together, we are delivering letters of recognition to NCHE, UNLV, UNR, and DRI regarding the formation of our postdoctoral union, the Academic Workers of Nevada, United Auto Workers. As postdocs, we are proud and passionate about the work we do and the impact we have on the community. Our efforts are vital to projects that bring in visibility, funding, prestige, innovation to our institutions. But despite our vital contributions, we do not have a voice in determining our benefits, workplace protections, pay, and other working conditions. Over the past several months, postdoctoral scholars across institutions, departments, and disciplines have been having conversations about their experiences, their goals, and the future of research in Nevada. Through those conversations, a majority of postdocs signed union authorization cards as a democratic demonstration of support for the formation of our union and for creating a formal avenue for communication. Supporting postdocs through a collaborative union relationship can help strengthen the recruitment and retention of talented researchers within Nevada's institutions. In turn, this helps maintain and grow the strong research environments and support the Carnegie R1 research status and the missions of our universities. Our hope today is to begin constructive and collaborative conversations about the next steps towards recognition and how we can move forward together. We ask the university to meet with us to discuss a fair process for recognition, recognizing our union, and begin negotiations for the first collective bargaining agreement under a fair and enforceable bargaining framework. As such, one already pertaining to NSHE, classified employees, over 120,000 higher education workers across the U.S. have formed unions with the UAW and address many of the same issues at their institutions. We look forward to working with you all. Thank you.
Good morning, Board, Chair, members of the committee. Robert Diaz from the Sheet Metal Workers Smart Local 88. Thank you for allowing us in the building today. We're here to talk about Agenda Item 6. What we've put together is obviously a coalition of families and faces behind us, and every face you can see that sitting behind me right now represents tens of thousands of working families behind them as well. Unfortunately, not everyone could be here today because, fortunately, most of them are at work. What we want to talk about is obviously the North Las Vegas NSU project and some of the highlights that I spent that I'm not going to be afforded the opportunity to discuss in 2 minutes reading the 75-page agreement that they've entered into. North Las Vegas Redevelopment Agency has committed $7.5 million, thereabouts. I'm not looking at my notes. And the Nevada legislature has committed $2.5 million. These are public dollars going to that project. If we do not engage as a public project using public works, employing under prevailing wage, in the construction of this, it is a willful circumvent of that law in itself, 338. What we wanted to bring to the attention, inclusive of just that, is what we get told repetitively is we can't afford this project if we pay prevailing wage. The alternative is what they've done is implemented a developer. So they're paying this developer the difference of what those wages could have been in lieu of doing the projects themselves to engage in a lease, using the lease language to stop what would enact as this public-private partnership. Those are the red flags we look for when we hear this stuff come out of your commission. As soon as we hear things like lease, public-private partnership, in comparison of the private aspect of this, the nearly $9 million that I've discussed in the allocation of this, 750,000 of those are coming from private, 250 from the NV Energy, and then 500 from a philanthropist of sort that chooses to remain anonymous. So what we're asking you to do is add to the agenda items to continue this conversation of how we can get this done through Public Works. Thank you.
Good evening, Board. Good morning, Board. My name is Lamar Jones. I represent the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I'm here to speak on agenda item number six. I just have a couple of points I'd just like to bring out. Nevada Trades Apprenticeship Programs are NECI students. Our apprentices attend the classes, complete coursework. They participate in accredited training programs while working in the field. When NECI excludes the building trades partnerships and the labor agreements, it is disenfranchised our students and limiting our opportunities of working as Nevadans. Union apprenticeship programs provide debt-free education, family-sustaining careers, health care, retirement, and long-term workforce development. Bill and Trades apprenticeships programs invest in millions in private dollars every year in working and in training at the cost of, to no cost to the taxpayers. NC should be creating pathways to Nevada students to stay working in Nevada, not important out-of-state labor while the apprenticeship struggle and access to opportunities. Our community workforce agreements also participate in the Bill and Trades. The trades ensure local hiring, skilled workforce, and standards of apprenticeship utilization, safer job sites, and on delivery. We just ask you to be cognizant on the job opportunities that we have here in Nevada that our apprenticeships and journeyman wiremen would love to be part of. I'd like to say thank you for the time. Appreciate you.
Good morning, Board. My name is Paul Kath. I'm representing the Culinary Union. We're here also to comment on agenda item six in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the building trades. Many of our members are married to members of the building trades. When building trades members are doing well, our members are doing better, right? We fundamentally believe that public dollars should be staying in Nevada and benefiting Nevada workers. Furthermore, we are entirely supportive of both the UAW and the Nevada Faculty Alliance's efforts to form unions and bargain a contract with the Board of Regents. And we hope that you all will be able to reach a just resolution to all these issues. Thank you.
Good morning, Board members. For the record, my name is Alfonso Lopez, and I represent the sheet metal workers of Local 88, here also to speak on agenda item six. Last year, myself and many people sitting behind me attended a groundbreaking ceremony at Hilo Park, which is the former Texas and Fiesta Station properties over on Rancho. We're excited to see a $600 million project along with a developer named Agora Realty and Management Incorporation. Unfortunately, the construction jobs that Agora brought to Las Vegas pay less than half. To be more specifically, these wages aren't even a third of what the area standard are in the Valley of Las Vegas. Now Agora's development agreement with Nevada State University and the City of North Las Vegas has drawn up an agreement that clearly says not a public works for this upcoming Nevada State University projects for the purpose purposely circumventing having to pay construction workers prevailing wages. Ironically, just this past September in 2025, UNLV Lead Center of Real Estate released a study focused on housing affordability. They found that a single income household needs to make at least $57.22 an hour to comfortably afford a mortgage on a medium-priced home in the Las Vegas Valley. This development agreement with all parties involved needs to be immediately amended and add construction worker protections like paying affordable living wages and giving work opportunities to the thousands of apprentices that are students in your College of Southern Nevada. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this concerning matter.
Good morning. My name is Patrick Villa, V-I-L-L-A. I'm a current professor of mathematics at the College of Southern Nevada. I apologize first if you see me wearing flip-flops. I'm not being casual. I have a foot injury, so I can't put a shoe on right now. So just want you to know I don't disrespect the board with these. I just want to speak a couple things about the agenda item six with all the people behind me. They're here for a reason. They didn't come out for fun. They have a legitimate concern. I also don't believe the board was trying to circumvent on purpose or, you know, sidestep any rules. But I know you're trying to save money and do the best you can, so it may have been an unintended consequence. I want to go back to a year ago. I was part of a group where we were making recommendations to the board, and we wanted one choice, others wanted another, and one of the reasons the faculty and staff didn't get, you know, their wish was cited. Our union people in town wanted this choice. The board's going to go with that choice, which, again, I think was fine. I ask that if you listen to the union people back then, you should listen to them now and hear their words, hear what they have to say. I hope when you discuss this agenda item, you're not afraid to say, maybe we need to hold and relook at this contract, relook at some things. Don't make it feel like we have to get this done now. It's better to get it right than to get it done now and fast. So I just ask that you have full discussion, ask the questions, give all considerations. Thank you.
Good morning, Board of Regents. My name is Cassie Charles, here with AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the largest state worker union and representing your hardworking classified employees. Also here commenting on agenda item six, I want to echo the comments of those who came before me and emphasize that public dollars are being used for this project, and the community wants to see this project being fulfilled by union labor, prevailing wage, and with community benefit agreements. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for hearing us. I think we can very clearly see how many people are in this room here to support this project, and I hope you hear us, and I hope you take our voices into action. Thank you.
Thank you. SES, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no callers at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. With that, we're going to move quickly into agenda item number two, which is consent items. So consent items 2A and 2B can be taken in one motion of approval, and I'd be interested in...
I would make a... Susan Breger, for the record, I'd make a motion for approval for 2A and 2B.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. Regent Del Carlo.
So we have thank you, Regent Del Carlo. We have a motion by Regent Breger for agenda item number two, the consent items for approval, seconded by Regent Del Carlo. Is there any discussion? And I will just let other regents know who are coming in through Zoom. Sometimes it's tough to take a look up at the screen and monitor questions. So if there is something, then just please be a little bit patient, and I'll make sure that I'm cognizant of getting over to you. Go ahead, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. In 10 years, we've always met our quarterly meetings on a Thursday, Friday. I looked some of those dates up, and they're not Thursday, Friday. So are we making a change on purpose? What's the? Can you just give me the reasoning behind that?
It is intentional and on purpose, and I'll ask our Chief of Staff, Nick Lajewski, to chime in with supporting those decisions.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Carrie Nikolajewski, for the record. It's on, yeah. I was just being quiet. So the change was a result of the discussion that took place at the March meeting. There were, particularly for the June dates, very busy week that those were proposed for. Regent Brown raised some concerns about staff because of sine die, and you know, giving a little bit of break for people to gather themselves and be prepared to walk into a quarterly meeting. So that was the adjustment on that one. And the September dates, those were also moved during the last meeting, and the board sort of coalesced around those dates. I don't remember the exact reason. I think there may have been a holiday situation there where we had to avoid. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chief of Staff Nick Lajewski. Is there any other discussion or concern about the dates? There's already been a motion and a second, so all in favor, please signify by saying aye or yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? If you oppose, please signify by saying no or nay. Thank you. Before we move into agenda item number three, I have to take just a 5-minute administrative break, and then we'll come back and go into agenda item number three. Thank you. All right. Thank you. I appreciate the patience and the time to allow me to take care of a couple of administrative matters. So we'll continue on with our meeting. Perfect. So listen, what I'd like to do, because of the folks who showed up today and in interest in the integrity of their time, we're going to move agenda item number six forward right now. And so what we'll do is call on our chief financial officer to give us a rundown on agenda item number six. And what would probably be beneficial for the board and those who have come in today is just a clear, exactly what this agenda item is, so that everybody's clear that we're talking about future projects, not anything specific to right now, so that there is, certainly time for continued conversation about some of the things that were voiced this morning. So I will kick this over to you. Thank you.
The chair, before I need to give my disclosure. Regent Downs.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Pursuant to NRS Chapter 281A, I hereby disclose I'm an employee of WNC and institute within NSHE. Because the independence of judgment of a reasonable person would not be materially affected by my situation, I'll vote on this matter.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Brooks, Vice Chair Goodman, Regents, Chancellor, Presidents. My name is Brody Leiser. I serve as the Chief Financial Officer for the System of Higher Education, and I will be presenting agenda item six. A couple of things to note. We did post supplemental material online for this agenda item. And so that's the version that we'll be working off of. But before I begin and to address the direction from Chair Brooks, we are here today specifically for the board to take action and set its priority rankings of capital improvement projects that will be submitted for the upcoming biennium. The way that the cycle works is today's meeting, the board will set its priorities, and I'll go through the presentation here in a minute. Then that ranked list will be submitted to the State Public Works Board for consideration, and ultimately the State Public Works Board will make its recommendations for capital projects to the governor for inclusion in the governor's recommended budget for the upcoming biennium. So these projects, and through this process, if they are approved, recommended by the governor as part of the 2027 capital improvement program, these all would be projects, with the exception of some minor maintenance projects, would all be projects that would be managed and overseen by the State Public Works Board. We are not here today to talk about projects that have previously been approved by the board, and so today's presentation will be limited to those projects that are being considered for ranking and submission for the upcoming biennium. Chair Brooks, I hope that addresses what you would like me to address, but happy to provide clarification.
It does. Thank you very much, and I appreciate that. So just so that we're clear and so that everybody recognizes, the board for this agenda item is not voting on any contracts. We're not having any conversations about contracts. This is purely just about the planning and future planning and the way things will eventually move, and then items will come back for the board.
That is correct.
Thank you.
All right. So with that, we will go on. And what I will note is, well, we'll get into it with the timeline before I get ahead of myself. The information that you will see today is familiar. This information, the institutions began talking about their capital projects at the March quarterly meeting, and then during the April special meeting, we had a presentation about the recommended ranking of capital improvement projects. So today we'll just give a very brief recap about what was approved in the 2025 legislative session, as well as the special session. Quickly go through the capital improvement budget process, which you've already seen, and then we'll get to the recommended ranking of the projects themselves for the board to have discussion on. So just as a reminder for the board, during the last regular legislative session, as well as the special session that followed, here's a list of approved projects that our institutions received funding for through the legislature. You could see that state general fund appropriations was just over $176 million, as well as commitments by our institutions, mainly for the UNR Life Sciences Building and the UNLV Leased Business School construction, commitments by those two universities to contribute towards the capital construction costs for those buildings. In total, with the university funds, the slot tax that's at the top of that chart, in the state funds, our institutions received just over $354 million in authorized and appropriated funding for capital projects. So that'll bring us to the capital budget process. And Chair and Regents, I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because you've already seen these slides, and I don't want to repeat them to you. Certainly don't want to read them to you. We are here. It's May 21st. And today, the board action that will be taken is to set the project priorities, as we discussed at the beginning of this agenda item discussion. The last bullet on this point, I will note that on August 26th, that will be the date that the Chancellor's Office, that we will go to the State Public Works Board along with institution representatives to present the board's priorities to the State Public Works Board. As you know, under the handbook, Title IV, Chapter 10, Section 26, outlines the process that we go through to get here to this point today and to the point where we had presented the recommended ranking list at the April meeting. Again, I don't intend to go through these in great detail, as you have seen these. The next couple slides identify the criteria that were used to evaluate projects by the chief business officers, and then ultimately the Council of Presidents. Again, here's more criteria that were used in the evaluation process. Oops. The one thing I would note that one other thing that was important, and I mentioned this in April, but that was important to the chief business officers was to include both a planning and construction project as a priority. And so when we get to the rank list, you will notice towards the top several projects on that list, there is a planning project and a construction project. And with regards to the inclusion of a planning project, typically the traditional cycle through the legislature is that planning for large-scale construction projects is approved one biennium, and then the construction funding would follow in a subsequent biennium. Hopefully the very next biennium, depending on available funding. So with that, we will move on to the rank list. And as I mentioned in April, as you can see, there is a focus and certainly a priority to address the deferred maintenance among our institutions. What I would just say is the magnitude of the deferred maintenance dollars, as well as the number of projects that you see related to maintenance on this list, reflect the critical infrastructure needs of all of our campuses across the state. What's new, Chair Brooks and Regents, for this slide, and I'm sorry, I went through that pretty quick. I don't want to repeat the list. You have seen it. So I'll click through this, but what we did add for this meeting and for the reference material following these slides are another table that includes, we worked with our campus colleagues to ensure that we had a good description narrative to provide as part of the presentation materials for this meeting. And you'll see that on the last slides here. It's the same rank list. If I didn't mention it already, the list and the ranking order is the same order that you were presented in April. There have been no changes. And so, Chair Brooks, with that, I am certainly open to questions regarding the proposed ranking list. We also have institution representatives that are available if there are detailed questions about a particular project, but would like to open it up for questions or board discussion, you know, followed, again, this will be an item where the board will take action and accept a motion to set the capital project priorities for submission to the Public Works Board. And what I will just tell you, and I know that you're aware of this, but you are the board through this process can approve the list as presented, can approve the list in a different order, and or can add or remove projects if that's your desire, and want to make sure that that's clear for the record. So.
Thank
with
you.
That, Chair Brooks, I'll stop
say, I appreciate that. I tell you, I think board members have been doing this for quite some time, and we appreciate you restating, you know, different ways that the board can move. The board is well aware of the options and choices that they have in all of our agenda items, and thank you for the presentation. I'll ask if there's any questions for Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. CFO Weiser, I noticed the second item is between one and two is $100 million. Okay, I get that. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this right. That $85 million is another separate bucket for deferred maintenance needs above and beyond the ones that are listed in the 23 other ones, because we've got roofs and chillers in there too. So really, the request is way over $100 million if you were to take the others and add them up. Is that correct? And what's that $85 million then for? Just other rankings that the institutions have?
Thank you.
Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, okay, absolutely. I understand what you're asking. The Brody Leiser, for the record. The $85 million is in addition to those larger maintenance projects that you are seeing on the ranking list. Our campus needs go well beyond everything that's on this list. And so, as you noted, we have large HVAC roof repair projects that are individually listed and ranked on the list here. In an ideal world, we would be able to secure funding to address this entire list. And our campuses and institutions would have no problem spending $100 million on deferred maintenance beyond the individual projects that are on this list. Now, as we go through the cycle and the budget process, understanding that there are limited resources available to the state, if the governor's recommended capital improvement program and or the legislatively approved capital improvement program, as an example, appropriated $100 million for deferred maintenance, but did not fund any of these other individual maintenance projects, at that point, I think our institutions would need to look at what their priorities are and whether they would be able to fund any of these larger projects within that $100 million. So the intent is that it's complementary to the individual projects, with the understanding that as a state, we have very limited resources, and we will need to go through the budget cycle and process, and depending on what the legislature ultimately approves, will dictate what projects are able to be completed. And I hope that addresses your question.
It does. Thank you. And I just have a comment. I've been on the board long enough where the Regents ranked them, and now we have the business officers and presidents help rank, and I like the way that's this new way better. I think you guys are closest to the ground, the business officers especially, and I'm happy with the ranking as it is. I have no changes to make to it, so just wanted to be on the record for that.
Thank you, Regent DelCarlo. Are there any other, Regent Breger?
I agree with Regent DelCarlo. It's really difficult to do this because there's so many needs and wants. One thing I would like to ask, and I don't even know if it's feasible, so, and I don't want to move it, but the School of Nursing expansion and clinical, is there any way with grants or foundation monies or donations, do we look for that for something that's so important? And I don't want to belabor this because I actually don't, I'm going to say it, like moving agenda items up when we have everybody's important in the audience. So if you want to do it now or just call me later, whichever you think is best.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Regent Breger. Yeah, we see that as a vitally important project and are definitely looking at other ways of moving it forward in an accelerated timeline. We every project on the list is urgent for all the campuses, but we understand that if we ended up having to wait for it to rise to the top of state funding, it might be longer than we want to go. And so as we raise money for some of the other projects, you know, one of the messages that I'm giving our community is the more that we can fundraise for the building, business building, the faster we can move forward with the other fine arts and nursing projects that are also urgently needed. So okay. Our hope is to move them forward.
No, I appreciate that because that's a critical need across the state and especially in Clark County with the growth that we've had. So anything we can do, and I don't want to change what we've done. I think everybody did a really great job. The other thing is the Northwest Campus is lucky that it can still be on the list to move forward because the land has been, you know, BLM for so long, and sometimes they can take things away. So far, we've been able to do things to let them know how serious we are, and I think we need to look at that. The Northwest is exploding as we speak with new people and rooftops, way more than 20 years ago and 10 and 5 years ago. So other than that, hard job, and everything is equally important. We just have to figure out how we get it to go where it needs to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Breger. Regent Fernandez.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation here. I just want to ensure that because this is these are our capital funding requests and it will be going through the public works process, that this is all going to be going through and will gain prevailing wage should it be approved by the legislature. I just also, you know, want to ensure that we are recognizing that we do have labor unions who are the backbone of the state. And I know that this requires a broader conversation and we are very specific on this item, but I want to ensure that with these specific priorities that that process, again, should it be funded, would get prevailing wage through it.
I think.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Chris Nielsen, yeah. Special counsel. I'm trying to get the button working. Thank you for your question, Regent Fernandez. You are correct that that's a discussion kind of beyond the scope of this agenda item. But I think if Mr. Leiser can just can weigh in just very quickly on that on your question, then we could have a broader discussion at a different time on that topic.
Thank you. For the record, Brody Leiser, Regent Fernandez. All projects within the state's capital improvement program are subject to NRS 338 as public works projects, which include requirements for a prevailing wage.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair. This actually answered my question between those two, between Regent Fernandez and our CFO. So I think I'm good then. I was concerned about addressing the public comment by people related to the unions today. I want to make sure that we're considering that in this process. And I didn't know if considering that would have changed some of these, the pricing and the ranking of some of these items. But if this already includes prevailing wage, then I guess we can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Regent Arascata, did you have anything?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair Brooks. Just right off the top on the capital improvement projects, on the ranking of number one, the biennial HEC check, the higher education capital construction, and the special higher education capital construction. So from doing quick research, this dollar amount, the $15 million, has not been increased by the state since 1984. Hence, what I'm asking is, not only have our Vice Chancellor of Government Relations, Rodriguez and Fireson, really going to have to walk those hallways with grace, but also the business officers. And I think it's important to realize that, speaking with some of the representatives from the campus here, there are millions of, and hundreds of millions of higher education capital construction and special higher education capital construction projects necessary right now that are far above the deferred maintenance programs, the deferred maintenance that's on number two. So with that stated, are there, or even Chancellor McNair, are there plans to speak to the state in regards to increasing that appropriation for HEC check money? And Mr. Leiser?
Thank you, Regent Arascata. Matt McNair, Chancellor in Chief, for the record. The reason, you're right, you're absolutely right, that has been $15 million for a very long time. That's the reason that we actually put the second request in there at $85 million to round it up to 100. And frankly, that is even prioritizing what we know are scarce resources, because I think we have upwards of $1 billion in actual deferred maintenance costs. And so we were trying to be reasonable. Rather, we know that it's not possible to get the entire amount that it would take to cover all these projects. And so that's the reason that we asked for the $85 million second on the list, rather than try to increase the amount that's in the statute and has been practiced for so very long, as you mentioned.
And if I may, Chair Brooks, again, Brody Leiser, through you to Regent Arascata, and just to compliment what the Chancellor said, in the 2023 session, our institutions did receive an additional $50 million on top of the $15 million for deferred maintenance, and our institutions have no problems getting through those funds. So I think, to build off of what the Chancellor said, the next process following today will be to take the priorities of this board to the State Public Works Board for consideration. And after we see what the State Public Works Board recommends to the governor, I believe that we still have a duty to communicate and engage with conversations with the governor's office if any of our priorities were not recommended by the State Public Works Board, that we have an obligation and duty to continue to have those conversations with the governor before the governor finalizes his or her recommended budget.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the background on the entire process.
Thank you. President Dalpy.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College. I just give some speaking points and some reference on this deferred maintenance discussion. the $15 million is an old number. And out of that, WNC receives $500,000 each biennium. And we are one of the smaller, if not the smaller, campuses. Our deferred maintenance total, with a recent report we did last fall from an outside company, came up with a $20 million price tag for WNC alone for deferred maintenance if we were to start fixing everything. That's $5 million ahead of the total allocation that goes to the whole system. And so looking at the priorities, we appreciate the additional money being put on there, but also if we did get that additional money, we're still hoping for some money for that HVAC unit on number six, because that $2.7 million project would never be covered under our deferred maintenance allocation under the biennial allotment anyway. So when it comes time for speaking points, if you look at the entire system as one of the smaller schools, we have more deferred maintenance overall than the system gets in funding each biennium.
Thank you, President Dalpe. Vice Chair Goodman.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to apologize for not being there in person. My daughter is graduating from high school today, and many of us had plans. So I know all of us are sad to not be there in person, but there were other plans, and this meeting was planned arbitrarily. So I did want to say that the Northwest campus, it's a big number when we look at that, and that's in my district. And I think it's important to understand that we've met on this, and I think we've had some really incredible conversations that are going to make this project much more than what has been presented to the legislature before. And we will still maintain and stick to all of the parameters, that have been designated by the legislature previously. But I think that we've come up with some really great ideas. And so for everyone that's watching, I want people to know that this isn't just, throwing out this $135 million again, because it is a very large number. But there's been some real wonderful progress on this. And I think that this project is really going to be a jewel for Nevada. So I just wanted to express my support and the support of this item. Thank you.
Chair Brooks, Regent Gokachia.
Yes, Regent Gokachia.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and from here at GBC campus in Elko. I'm prepared to make a motion. We stand by our rankings. I think they're what we've decided on. And when we talk about the CSN campus, clearly it's a large dollar amount, but again, we've got to run with it. One thing I'd like to do, though, going forward, if we could, and I'm not saying tomorrow, but over the next year, as we work on this, we probably need to, instead of saying, well, we've got $1 billion in deferred maintenance, see if we can just kind of get our arms around that a little bit, Mr. Leiser, and are we talking $1 billion or only $750 million, or are we talking $1.2 billion? We probably need, going forward in the future, actually be able to, as we do another budget process, actually come up with a kind of a round number of where we are truly, rather than, because it's there and it's growing. And I think we're all concerned about the next legislative session, and I wouldn't want to be the governor and have to look at this list and decide whether we do some more deferred maintenance and keep our building standing, or we build some new, some more new ones. The requests are there. We need new buildings and to expand these campuses, but we can't let the old ones fall down. So I'm at this point, I'm prepared to make a motion that we stand by the rankings we have. I believe in them, and I appreciate CFO Leiser's explanation on the prevailing wage. Hey, that's the law, and if it's over 100,000, you pay prevailing wage. So, I appreciate the discussion from those people there. But again, the law is pretty specific, and I'm prepared to move forward. So whenever you're ready to entertain a motion, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. So I appreciate that, Regent Gokachia. So it sounded like you were making a motion to approve the recommended ranking for capital construction planning and deferred maintenance. Is there a second to that motion? Regent Del Carlo?
I'll second it, sir.
Okay, so it's seconded by Regent Del Carlo. I will open up one more time for discussion and go to...
I have a question.
I do too.
Okay. Regent Carballo.
Thank you. I echo what Regent Gokachia mentioned regarding capital improvement. I did mention this at the March meeting that I think that we need to take a deeper look at what we have and not and really understand what is out there. I believe we asked for $85 million last session, I think, or something around there, and unfortunately we were not able to get that. So I support trying again, but I know that that's a heavy lift for the legislature. So I do support that. I do want to know, and President Dalby touched on this a little bit, but I'd like to hear how we prioritize the HECSHEC funds, and if we were able to get $100 million, as we're asking for here, how would we prioritize that among all of our institutions and the system? Would it look the same as it does with just the HECSHEC? And what does that look like? Or is there a plan for that at this point?
For the record, Brody Leiser, if I understand your question correctly, is the plan to distribute whatever bucket of money may be approved to address deferred maintenance?
Yes.
And there has been a formula used. I believe that it has been a proportionate split of funding on, I don't know if it's based on square footage or weighted student credit hours. I'm hoping someone can help me out. But there is a proportionate split formula that's used for the HECSHEC money. And I apologize that I don't have the details, but hopefully I can get a...
It looks like Mr. Vitone is
going to... Vitone's coming up.
Yeah.
And so before he addresses that specifically, there would
be... Almost jumped in there, didn't you?
There would be a, you know, some level of...
Third in line, Andrew.
Distribution formula.
Just one moment, just administratively. Regent Ariscotta, Regent Ariscotta, I believe your mic is on. Thank you.
There would be some mechanism to distribute the funding, and with a big pot like that, I believe that we would include discussion with the chief business officers to get input from the institutions to determine what that would look like. But I'll let, thank you, Mr. Vitone, for clarifying your question.
Hi, Chris Vitone for the record. So in the past, we have distributed the HECSHEC based on a proportional share of square footage with a floor level for the smaller institutions. As President Dalby mentioned, the smaller institutions, we put a floor of $500,000 on the $15 million allocation. When we had the $50 million additional allocation in 2023, we approached that similarly. That floor in that case was $1.5 million. So in that session with the 15 and the 50, the smaller institutions received a total of $2 million, but the other institutions, it was proportional based on their square footage.
Thank you, Mr. Vitone, for the context, including the floor discussion. And I think I'm in debt now for at least the coffee.
Yes, I appreciate that clarification as well, and the intention moving forward if we were to get the additional money to do the same or to allocate it in an equitable manner. I will also just say once again that I do think that we need to look at how we prioritize capital improvements based on our budgets, and I would also hope that any kind of system level economies of scale for any of this would be considered for similar projects for HVACs or things like that. And again, I understand that, you know, you have different compressors, you have different units on different campuses, but any way that we can save money and maybe come together for a larger project, I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. I'd like to see before the legislative session similar to what President Dalpe said he did. He hired an outside consultant, apparently, to come in and give him exactly where he is for deferred maintenance. I'd like to see all the institutions do that, so we have that information ready for the next session. So we, it's just a figure we have. And then I don't know if this isn't really part of it, but going forward, we've got all this deferred maintenance, but we've got new buildings coming up too. Does anybody know if we have a process where we're setting money aside for that deferred maintenance once that building starts getting old? Does anybody know the answer to that, or should that something the board should look at, maybe future business?
Future business would be, I think, most appropriate, or circle back with CFO Leiser.
Thank you. I'll bring that up. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional discussion? So there's a motion on the floor by Regent Gokachia to approve the recommended rankings for the capital construction planning and deferred maintenance. It was seconded by Regent Del Carlo. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye or yes.
Aye.
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 Those who oppose, please signify by saying no or nay. And with that, we will move back over to agenda item number three. And I will ask President Heavey to lead that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Brooks, Vice Chair Goodman, members of the board, and Chancellor Chris Heavey, interim president of UNLV. I'm delighted to be in front of you today to ask for approval of the Academic Health Center Master Affiliation Agreement between UMC and the Kirkorian School of Medicine at UNLV. We are asking for approval of the amended agreement as amended by the Board of County Commissioners on Tuesday. It was posted as supplemental material yesterday. I just want to say briefly, first we have the CEO of UMC and the COO of UMC, Mason Van Howling and Tony Marinello, here in support of this agreement. I have Dean Allison Netsky of the Kirkorian School of Medicine, and also thank the Board of County Commissioners for their support and NHBC for their support of this very important new affiliation agreement. This creates a bold vision for creating an academic health center with our primary partner of UMC, and also allows for the future collaboration with the Intermountain Health Children's Hospital in the form of new pediatric residencies. Like all agreements, it was a negotiated agreement, and so it had some give and take in the process, but it sets a new baseline of trust and ensures compliance with the important CMS regulations related to the funding of GME, which is very important to both UNLV's Kirkorian School of Medicine and UMC. One of the aspects of compliance is a new system that we will implement to ensure the location of the residents when they're working on site. It's called ResQ. This is a solution that's used by many large academic health centers such as UCLA, UC Davis, and even Cedars-Sinai in LA. It's not geo-tracking, it is geo-fencing, and so it basically just shows where are they in the designated work zone or not. It does not give precise locations and will not track people beyond the issue of whether or not they're in the work zone. But it will ensure compliance with CMS reporting requirements to meet the expectations of the federal government. There's a lot of other complicated aspects of this negotiation, but in general, we want to say that we're very excited about this next step. And just very briefly, I'll tell you how it was amended on Tuesday by the County Commission. The agreement was changed in Section 3.3A to allow us to start new pediatric residency programs without going through the requirement of notification and approval of UMC. And it was in Section 13.1, it was revised to be a five-year agreement rather than a five-year agreement that would have three additional five-year renewals. And then the language in Section 13.2 was revised to also clarify that it's now only a five-year agreement. And so, again, we're asking for the approval of the amended agreement that was posted yesterday, and very excited to see this move forward. And the dean and UMC CEO and I are here to answer any specific questions that the board might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Heavey. Are there any questions from Regents specific to this agenda item? Vice Chair Goodman?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, President Heavey. As the chair of the Health Sciences Committee, I have been working on this diligently with our colleague, Marcia Turner. And I think it's very important to acknowledge the fact that President Heavey, our interim dean, Allison Netsky, our CEO of UMC, Mason Van Howling, the president of the board, John O'Reilly, all of these individuals came together. And of course, all the team that's there, I can't list everybody today, all the attorneys. This was a very, this was a true negotiation. And I give kudos to all of those involved because there were some things that were given up and there was a lot of wonderful compromise. And it was all for the betterment of our community and for the betterment of healthcare in Southern Nevada. And I'm just grateful for everyone who's there and everyone who is a part of this. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Chair Goodman. Vice Chair Goodman.
Thank you. Regent Fernandez.
Thank you, Chair. I really want to echo what Vice Chair Goodman just shared here, and I want to give kudos to everyone involved. This has been something that I think has been a weight on our shoulders for a while in trying to determine how it is that we can move our state forward. I think there's a lot of investment that's been done throughout the years. So I do want to also give a shout out to not only President Heavey, but also the community partners and UMC in the county. All of you have been able to bring this together. And I think this really gives us a vision for what we can accomplish in the future. So thank you all. And thank you all for the commitment to this.
Thank you, Regent O'Carlo, and then Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. I, too, want to echo my colleagues and just say thank you to all the members involved. I know these kinds of negotiations are very difficult, and they're very time-consuming, but you got there. And as Regent Goodman said, there is compromise involved. We always don't get exactly what we want, but when we, at the end of the day, when we agree to the terms, we walk out together agreeing, and those handshakes, it moves our community forward down here, and it's really great to have a 20-year agreement with the 5-year renewal. That really shows a really deep commitment, and UNLV and UMC really, truly, desperately need each other. So the better you can get along, it's just better for the community, for the patients, and for healthcare in Nevada. It's just so critical down here. I mean, we lost a great acting president because of the healthcare in Nevada. She did not, we all speaking of Dr. Klumstein's predecessor who came from the registry, but he really liked Nevada. I think he would have stayed, but they just, the healthcare did not compare to what they had in Texas, so he did leave. But we've got to get that better, and great healthcare does attract companies. So it is an economic diversity divider, attractor too. So thank you for all the efforts. This was not easy, I know. I'm also on the Health and Science Committee, and Chair Goodman kept me informed, and it's like, wow, I'm glad I wasn't in that one, but thank you.
Thank you, Regent O'Carlo. Appreciate those comments. I do want to clarify that the amended agreement then does just have a 5-year term, and we would renegotiate that before the expiration. But we're definitely committed to the long-term partnership with UMC.
Okay, I missed that then, because the original one had the 20 years, and so this is just 5 years you'll come back.
Yes.
Okay. That's 5 years is good, too. But this will help get more GMEs, too, right?
Yes, thank you for the question. This will allow us to make sure that we can be the academic partner of the Intermountain Health Children's Hospital, which is also our goal in the pediatric space, while maintaining the vision of creating the academic health center in partnership with UMC.
Thank you, President Heavey. We'll go to Regent Carvalho and then Regent Gokachia.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I want to echo everything that's been said. I think it's important that we have this collaboration and partnership. I especially want to say thank you for the addition of the allowance of UNLV to partner with the new pediatric hospital. As somebody who has a personal stake in children's health care in Nevada, I find this very important for us, and so I do appreciate that this was added. I will say also that the provision of using the geofencing, in my view, is a little uncomfortable, although as President Heavey mentioned, this is something that is done at other institutions, and so that gives me a little bit of comfort there. I also was concerned that we spelled out a specific, I'm assuming, private company in this agreement, although I do also see the provision that says or comparable feature, so that also allays some concerns that I have with that. But overall, I appreciate that this is before us today, and I am in full support. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Regent Carvalho. I just want to thank Dean Netsky for her proactive approach for informing the residents about the nature of that solution, and she's already held an information session for all the residents to explain how it will work and created a very helpful FAQ for them, so to dispel many of the misconceptions that may exist about the implications of the ResQ geofencing solution. Thank you.
Thank you, President Heavey. Regent Goguchia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Heavey, I've just got a question, if you can kind of get you, fill me in, help me a little bit on the GME consortium and who the participants are going to be there and exactly what, you know, how that advisory board is going to work and who all is going to be players in that. Can you just kind of give me a quick thumbnail on that?
Yes, thank you for the question, Regent Goguchia. That will be formed by members of UMC and UNLV who will be appointed. I think the dean or Mason Van Hollen could give you the exact details, but the idea is to create a partnership kind of oversight board, and it was discussed kind of at length at the Board of County Commissioners meeting on Tuesday to make sure that the Board of County Commissioners has insight into what's happening in terms of the GME management of existing programs and growth. And one of the important facets of that consortium will be to look for new strategic opportunities where UMC and UNLV can add residency programs that will meet community needs. And we all know that we have extensive additional needs in residency programs and new specialty areas. And so a great part of this agreement is laying the foundation for a more kind of proactive strategic growth together. And the consortium will basically be in charge of identifying those opportunities. And I'll ask the dean or Mason if they want to add anything. All right. They felt like that captured it well, so.
Okay, and I really appreciate that, President Heavey. But, and I was, you know, all right, will the Board of Regents or NISHI or at least have maybe not feedback, but at least be kept abreast of what's happening. I mean, I get concerned, and maybe very similar to what the Clark County Commissioners, you know, all you've got UMC and you've got UNLV, but I want to make sure that everyone's aware of what's moving forward, just in all fairness, and it is a five-year contract. I was a little concerned that I don't mind saying 20 and re-ratify every five is but you can get kind of comfortable there. So I'm glad it's a five-year contract, and we'll come back and at least some board will come back and revisit it at that point, and it'll be great. But I just want to make sure that we're all kept abreast of it, and very similar to, I think, where Clark County Commission was coming from.
Yeah, thank you for those comments, Regent Goguchia. I know Vice Chair Goodman is the chair of the Health Science Committee, invited updates from the School of Medicine on a regular basis, and we can make sure to include updates on the activities of the GME Consortium in those updates that are given to the Health Science Committee or to the full board on a regular basis so that you're aware of how we're doing in the existing programs and new initiatives that are being contemplated for strategic growth.
Well, I thank you, and I've got a ton of faith in the Health Science Committee, and you don't need to bring it to the full board, but just so we have an active partner in there as well, reporting back to this board. I appreciate that. Thank you, President.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Heavey. This was a very large undertaking. It was something that you had taken on when you became interim president. There have been, from what I understand, years of conversations that have taken place over the negotiations, the contracts, affiliations, partnerships, stakeholders. So the amount of work that was done here collaboratively cannot be understated. And I greatly appreciate your time and investment in this, the commissioners for Clark County, their time and investment in this, all of the leadership over at UMC, everybody else who was an active participant in this. It's extraordinary that you were able to lead these efforts and get this done. I do appreciate that County Commissioner Gibson is with us, and while others have been afforded the time for remarks, I just wanted to ask if the commissioner would hang on a second. Commissioner Gibson.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Jim Gibson, Clark County Commission. I am relieved. And that's about all I can say. We have worked very, very hard to get to this point, and some of us have been kind of day-to-day in it, and it is rewarding to know that you can actually get to the end of the road when there appear to be nothing but obstacles in the way. So credit to the hospital leadership, credit to President Heavey. The chancellor early on was a very important part of the conversations we were having, and to members of the board. Now, Commissioner Naft, our chair, spent a lot of time working on this, and our staff did also. And so we are, all of us, now that I think about it, relieved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Gibson. Regent Breger, you had a comment?
Yes, I did, and do. I just want to thank everyone. I think it's pretty amazing. I'll go back. I don't often go back to the commission days, but when we created the board that John O'Reilly has chaired, it was, at first we were a little skeptical, and I think that Mason remembers that, or of course a CEO there. And I did serve as vice chair of UMC for, I think, 12 years, but it really made a difference because everyone was looking for the same goals. And you had other people that bought in. And so it made a difference between UMC and the Board of Commissioners. And so I think that this in the future, as it continues on, that we are, maybe we have a place at the board as one seat might make a difference so that there's someone that can relay the information just like we do with other things that we sit on. The county is a little more unique of what they sit on. It's a little bit more global, from water authority to LVCVA and different things. So I think it'd be something I'd like to see us look at, that maybe it's a chair of the Health and Science Committee might be a good situation as we move on through our decisions. So thank you to everyone. I know how complex it can be, and I appreciate the endeavors and the work that took place.
Thank you. Vice Chair Goodman.
If I may, I'd like to make a motion to approve, please.
Is there a second?
Second from Susan Breger.
And Chair Brooks, just for clarification, the motion were motion to approve the agreement, the amended agreement as identified in the supplemental materials.
Thank you. So there's a motion by Vice Chair Goodman to approve agenda item number 3. This is the Academic Health Center Master Affiliation Agreement between University Medical Center and the Kirk-Kerkorian School of Medicine at UNLV. This motion also includes supplemental material that was provided to the board. This was seconded by Regent Breger, and I will kindly ask our Chief of Staff, Chief of Staff Nick Lajewski, to take a roll call vote.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Breger.
Yes.
Chair Brooks.
Yes.
Regent Brown.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Yes.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Regent Downs.
Yes.
Regent Fernandez.
Aye.
Regent Kwikuchiya?
Yes.
Vice Chair Goodman?
Yes.
Regent McGrath?
Yes.
Regent Arascada?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Chief of Staff Nick Lujewski. Congratulations to everybody involved. Thank you all. Thank you for the work. And with that, we'll move on to agenda item number 4. And President Heavey, please lead us in that discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Brooks, Vice Chair Goodman, members of the board, Chancellor. Today we're here to give an information-only update on an important roadway project that will border the UNLV campus. As we just saw in the last item, our partnership with Clark County is absolutely vital to the success of UNLV and all of the Southern Nevada institutions, and so we're happy to work with them in partnership. You may recall that a year ago we were here with an action item to approve a series of easements that would have supported a vision of the project to relieve traffic coming from the Harry Reid International Airport to the resort corridor of a depressed Tropicana roadway to relieve particularly the traffic at University Center and Tropicana. The county has subsequently estimated the cost of that vision of the project to be so high as to be impractical. And so I'm delighted to have our partners from Clark County, Commissioner Gibson and his Director of State Public Works, Dennis Cederberg, here to brief the board on the updated vision of this project so that you are aware of how they foresee this project moving forward when they are ready to commence construction. And so with that, I'll hand it over to the county, who are the experts on this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Chair, members of this board. We were here in March of last year as a result of an effort to give real credence to our commitment to a relationship with the university. You raised important questions, or the university did, and questions and concerns about the effect of a flyover construction project. We agreed that we ought to take a hard look at other things, other alternatives that would cause us to be able to be on the same page with you. And so we've taken all that time in an effort to find a way to accommodate your concerns. I want to note that in the last several years, we've sensed that we needed to reinforce the relationship with the university. And we changed the name to University Center Drive. We are working very hard and committing, and we've committed resources, and not in the not-too-distant future, the Maryland Parkway improvements will be completed. We worked very hard on the master affiliation agreement because it's critical to us that the medical school be a leader in the community, and a host of other things that we have done purposefully. They needed to be done for sure, but we approach them because they're a part of building or rebuilding a relationship that can be meaningful. And the benefit, of course, comes to all of us. Mr. Cederberg is our Public Works Director, and he's presented to you before. And he's here to help you understand what we attempted to do, what the costs became, and the difficulty that we're going to have, the difficulties that we encountered to make it impossible for us to go forward. I want to say one other thing. In deference to our effort to rebuild this relationship, we have not taken this item to our board yet. We want to be able to report that we have come here, we've helped you understand what our limitations are before we go to our board to get approval to move forward. And of course, we're in a hurry. So we thank you very much for accommodating us on this agenda. So I'm going to ask our Public Works Director now, Dennis Cederberg, to step forward and take you through the real detail.
Good morning, Chairman Brooks, members of the board. I'm Dennis Cederberg with Clark County Public Works. Today I have a brief presentation on where we have been with this project and where we are today. The purpose of this project, which you've probably seen this before, is we're looking to relieve congestion with all the northbound traffic coming out of the airport and through the airport tunnel accessing northern portions of the valley. It's also to improve safety by eliminating some of the conflicts that we have in the area and the backups and rear-end type collisions we have on UCD going northbound. Improve access for traffic traveling north via University Drive. The majority of the traffic, it's a one-way street, all northbound. A good portion, about 50% of it, turns westbound at Tropicana. The other 50% proceeds northbound on University Center Drive. Also, the project would improve access for traveling along airport because we did have an underpass for the westbound traffic on Tropicana coming out of the airport to go beneath Paradise Road. So it would improve travel along Paradise Road by eliminating some of the traffic through the intersection. Also, the traffic traveling to Thomas and Mack would not have to conflict or also follow all the traffic that's going to the airport and north. So our initial proposal, which we brought to this board previously, was an overpass of taking the northbound traffic on University Center Drive over the top of Tropicana and allowing the westbound traffic to proceed westbound, go under Paradise, and then merge with Tropicana to the west. The northbound traffic would go over the Tropicana, proceed northbound. We also had a bridge over the Thomas and Mack Drive between Paradise and University Center Drive. The estimated cost at that time was $78 million. Excuse me, $78 million. May I? Thank you. So this is the project that was the overpass, which
Please take your time.
Created visual impacts to the university in Thomas and Mack. So with that in mind, we met with the staff from the university. We offered a solution with a depressed roadway outside the footprint of Tropicana Avenue. With the cooperation of the university, they would have to provide the additional right-of-way necessary to make that happen. This avoided a lot of utility relocations. So with this proposal, we had both east and west depressed sections of the Beltway, Tropicana. They included 7 bridges, separate access to the TNC lot. We looked at having crossing to provide the free flow northbound, a pedestrian overpass on UCD south of Tropicana. There was a high presence of groundwater, which required the construction of a pump house. Groundwater was estimated at 12 feet as shallow as 12 feet. The cost, I have to apologize, this is an incorrect estimate. This estimate, the 195, didn't show up till about 2023. At this time in 2019, it was a $150 million estimate. So then the price climbed from the 150 to the 195. So we looked at ways to reduce the cost of the depressed section and continue the free flow traffic on University Center Drive and the depressed section. So we reduced the 7 bridges to 4 bridges, and we kept the eastbound traffic at grade, creating 2 new intersections at Paradise and University Center Drive. The revised cost dropped from 195 to 115 million. Today's current estimate, with an independent cost estimate we just had done a few months ago, it's now $210 million. It includes about over 1,400 piles driven to create the retaining walls through the depressed section. Due to the presence of the groundwater, these piles are driven almost 80 to 100 feet deep in locations. And this created problems with the construction of the bridge within the region, runway protection zone, which is shown there in blue. We would have to do certain coordination with air traffic anytime we wanted to build at that location. So with the $200 million cost estimate, we went back and tried to look again at the overpass. So we looked at the overpass and we tried to reduce its impact by reducing the total length of the structure by 400 feet. And we removed one bridge over the Thomas and Mack Drive. Under the depressed section of Tropicana, that roadway was going to go away anyway. The airport wanted to eliminate that road through the TNC area and rebuild the TNC parking lot. So the estimated cost now of this one is $97 million. So this was an initial view when we had our prior proposal for the overpass, and I mentioned we reduced it by 400 feet. As you can see, you're on Tropicana headed eastbound, looking toward the Thomas and Mack. You can see that bridge over to the Thomas and Mack driveway and its impact. So with our reduced section, we eliminated that bridge, shortened the structure by 400 feet, allowing for a better visual, a less impacting visual impact. This was a view that you've seen before as the approach from northbound UCD towards Tropicana. So we also added a couple of views here. As most of the cars are going over the overpass, over Tropicana, these are the views that the traveling public would see of the university as they passed over the overpass. Another progression of the views. And this is finally over Tropicana, and they're now on their way down, descending onto the University Center Drive. So we made a comparison of the revised overpass and the revised DDI, which we had eliminated one of the depressed sections for eastbound. So when you looked at the benefit-cost ratio, the revised overpass was 1.8, the revised DDI was 1.9. The construction cost was significantly different, about half. $97 million for the overpass, $210 million for the DDI, depressed Tropicana. The construction duration, 24 months for the overpass, 36 plus months for the depressed section. That's because we don't know what kind of coordination and how much influence during construction we will have within the region, the runway protection zone with air traffic. Pedestrian, the transit access with the depressed section, we had to reroute the westbound bus route to head north, on turn north at University Center Drive, go to Naples, turn west on Naples, and then head south back down on Paradise. So the transit system, stops got eliminated, five stops had to be relocated with the depressed section. On the pedestrian access and crosswalks, with the overpass, everything remains as is. With the revised EDI, we had five additional crosswalks for pedestrians to cross at intersections. Traffic signals, everything remains the same. Under the overpass, no change. Revised EDI, we added one traffic signal and one PED signal for northbound traffic on University Center Drive. The number of bridges we reduced from 4 to 2 with the revised overpass. Impact on the billboards, all billboards along Tropicana and part of University Center Drive had to be relocated. With the revised overpass, there's minimal impact on the billboards. There has minimum relocation laterally. The right-of-way impact for the overpass was 5 acres on the DOA property. Revised EDI, which we had, there was about 15 acres total that was needed between Department of Aviation and UNLV. The construction in the runway protection zone was minimal with the overpass, and with the revised EDI, as I mentioned, we had drilled shafts up to for the bridge. Those are 70 feet deep, plus the depth of the press section. With the groundwater overpass, we needed no pump house. It could be all gravity flow. On the DDI, we had to build a pump house at the corner of Tropicana and University Center Drive, the northeast corner would have a pump house in that location. Impact at Thomas and Mack overpass, parking lot, none for the overpass. With a revised EDI, you lose 400 spots out of the parking lot. TNC operations pretty much stay the same. The visual impacts is the biggest, is where the above grade has a significant visual impact. The below grade has a minimal visual impact. So the fulfillment of the purpose and need, the purpose with the overpass gives the free flow traffic continuous free flow past Tropicana to the westbound and to the northbound. Because of the revised EDI, we added another signal on University Center Drive, so it didn't make a big enough impact, and that's where the reduced benefit came in. So one other item I wanted to bring before you, we have a project we call the Tropicana or Tompkins Avenue Extension. It's a new connection from Koval Lane down to Paradise to bring as an alternative to Tropicana for airport-bound traffic and departing airport traffic. The road would extend from Koval down over the top of Paradise, and it would also, over the top of Paradise for westbound, and it would have a free flow movement southbound right turn off of Tompkins down to Paradise Road. As that's the portion in red is what we proposed to build initially for our project. So as you can see, if you come northbound on University Center Drive, you will have the ability to take a ramp, turn westbound, go over the top of Paradise, and continue on to Tompkins or Koval Lane. An alternative to doing this project would be in the in the blue, and the blue would extend Tompkins over University Center Drive, over Paradise, and could land in a Thomas and Mack parking lot. The exhibit there shows there could also be opportunities for a separate multi-use path along the corridor. And these are some just visual renderings that we had prepared showing what the Tompkins alignment would be towards UNLV. This is looking east. This one is looking west along the Tompkins alignment over Paradise. This one is another northwest view. As you can see, I'll back up one. As you can see on the University Center Drive, underneath the overpass on University Center Drive, you can see the ramp that you take to go westbound on Tompkins. This is just another view looking northwest. That concludes my presentation.
Well, thank you very much for all of that information. The renderings look fantastic. We recognize that there's an awful lot of time and work that goes into this. There are a couple of regents that have some questions, and we'll start with Regent Breger and then move over to Regent Carvalho.
Thank you so much. Great presentation. I had then, I'm going to say pleasure, to work with Dennis on, so I was in the Southwest, so many, not only projects and roads and signals. He is the guru of Clark County, quite frankly, and I have always been so impressed of what you do, how you do, and he really does consider many options and what it does to the roadways, the people, the traffic. He just doesn't look at it one way. So I just want to say I appreciate it. And what I would like to do, from having actually seen this many years ago when I was sitting on the other side, is I know we have more conversation, but a motion to approve and then hear what anyone else has to say. Okay. Oh, that's right. It is information only. Sorry I got carried away because it was done so nicely. I think after we hear from the county and it comes back, hopefully we'll have that same consideration.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. I'm hoping that maybe we can put something back up on the screen. It's slide number 5 on the county's, six on the county's presentation, if possible. Or do you have it in front of you? Because I have some specific
they
questions.
Have to load.
It's the revised.
There we go.
Sorry.
Okay, perfect. So I have a few questions regarding this. So one, you mentioned that the traffic in and access into the Thomas and Mack would be improved with this plan. Is that the case?
What you will have is the traffic that wants to go to Thomas and Mack on Tropicana on University Center Drive heading northbound will have a better cycle at the signal at Tropicana because the majority of the traffic is going to take the flyover and head northbound and westbound. So the access to Tropicana will kind of be separate, or to Thomas and Mack will be separate from the traffic that wants to continue north or west.
Okay, so the roadway that we see there, the University Center roadway that's there, to the right of that flyover will still exist.
There's another slide I can show on a rendering if you want to see that.
Okay. I just
want
to make
sure.
This
one right here. See this right
okay.
here? This one
okay.
shows you the Thomas and Mack traffic, UNLV traffic, and then the airport exit traffic northbound and westbound.
Okay. So is the light is still there, though.
The traffic signal will remain because you're still dealing with the traffic east and west at Grade Tropicana.
Right. Okay. Okay, that was one question. My other question is, our property that is affectionately known as the 42 acres is in this area back on slide, what slide is that again? Five or six?
This one, farther west of here is the 42 acres, west of the channel that you see there. The 42 acres isn't shown on this slide.
Okay, but on slide six, I think it is. Right there. Right. It is further west. I thought that part that's right there,
that blue area right there is in the RPZ. That's all the Department of Aviation property. Yours is still a little farther west of this.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be sure. For some reason, I was thinking that part was 42 acres. So then there's no impact to the ingress and egress for that property then with this, that it doesn't look like there's any
42
impact.
Acres?
Uh-huh.
The 42 acres is along the Tompkins alignment.
Mm-hmm.
The northern portion of that 42 acres is where Tompkins would pass through. So access to that parcel would be enhanced because it would have access to the north and access from the south, both.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I think that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other regents with questions? I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much for the presentation. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We appreciate all the work that the County Commission is doing with UNLV, and thank you for the great partnership. And with that, we'll move on to agenda item number 5. This is the 2026 NC Space Report, and we'll call on our Chief Financial Officer once again.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Sorry, I'm learning how to use my new tablet.
Take as much time as you need. It's really okay.
All right. My name is Brody Leiser. I serve as the CFO for the Nevada System of Higher Education. Chair Brooks, Regents, I will present agenda item 5, which is the NC Space Report. This item had a supplemental material posted online, and so I want to make sure that the regents and members listening, public audience members, are aware we had some corrections to make with the space report. And I think we will load this up here shortly. But the space report is provided pursuant to Title IV, Chapter 10, Section 26 of the Board Handbook. which indicates that each institution will update its master plan every 2 years, provide the chancellor and the regents with a standardized statistical profile describing the physical dimensions of each campus operated by the institution. And the profile will include the area by type, age of the facility. So we typically present this report every 2 years at the May meeting, and that is what we are here today to talk about. So we will... Okay, we don't have a PowerPoint. As I learned the process, I guess we don't pull the reports up on the screen for you all, but I believe you all have access to the report itself, so I won't go, I do not intend to go through details on the report. A couple of things that I would note here is the space codes. If you look at, it's page 4 of the meeting material, it's the first page of the report itself, which is a system-wide overview. I would note that the space codes that are used come from the Department of Education, the National Center for Education Statistics, and is referred to as the Facilities Inventory and Classification Manual. So what you'll see, and I won't go through every page, but what you'll see is a high level of the space use codes along the left, along with a description such as classroom facilities, office facilities, those types of areas. The first set of numbers reflects the actual square footage from academic year 2023-2024. The middle set of numbers represents the change from academic year 25-26 to academic year 23 and 24. The third column or third set of numbers then shows the actual square footage for academic year 25-26, and each of those areas are broken down by owned versus leased space. In addition, to the far right, you will see student enrollment totals summarized here on this first page of the report for the system, and then each institution's data follows that on the individual pages. So I won't go through details on the reports. Substantial changes for each institution are noted on the comments for the institution page of the report. What I will say is that currently, for all square footage that is reported, we own approximately 95.4% of the total square footage and are leasing about 4.6%. Those numbers are consistent with the percentages from the academic year 23-24. So they did not, they changed about a tenth of a percent. Overall, the growth is about 10% over those 2 years. Again, I won't get into details. What I will say is that the growth is mainly due to a couple of CSN facilities that came online, the Deborah March Center of Excellence, as well as Historic Westside Educational Center. And so those are driving more than half of the growth for the two-year period. And with that, Chair Brooks, Regents, that concludes my remarks. I'm sorry it doesn't, and I apologize because I have a real bad habit of doing this, of telling you that I'm done and then telling you, but I've got one more thing. So I do want to just note that I believe my understanding for the enrollment counts on this report, that those enrollment counts include all students that are in credit earning programs, and so that would include our full-time students within our institutions, as well as the students that are enrolled through dual and or concurrent enrollment. With that, I conclude my remarks and would be happy to address any questions.
Thank you,
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we've come accustomed to your style of providing us information, and it's really okay. Regent Del Carlo? And Regent, and then I'll let you guys
go. Our buttons need looking into. They're just not working good today. My question is, when you mentioned leases, which that makes my ears burn, do we have an opportunity to find out what leases, you know, after 3 to 5 years, you're throwing money away, as far as I'm concerned, when you have a lease. Do we look futuristically on purchase or finding out if our leases are used to a maximum, to where they're not like empty rooms in there, to where if they're close to other facilities that we have, that maybe they share facilities instead of having this lease here and this lease there. So if it's not an answer for today, it's something, and I could bring it up as new business if that's necessary. But I think it's really important because it's money not well spent. And I've always been conscientious of that in all my years of serving. So if it's not something for today, I can bring it up for a future date. See, the buttons are not good today.
We don't have any money for new mics.
Yeah, I'm having the same issue, Regent Brager. Yeah, I believe that what you brought up just now is probably most appropriate for new business, and it'll then it can go formally into the hopper and bring something back at a future agenda.
Okay, and I don't accept that we don't have money for things, but go ahead.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo?
Thank you, Chair Brooks. So, CFO Leiser, what is the real purpose of this? I know it's in our code. Is this a standard thing that higher ed does? And what's it telling us? And do we compare this? I saw you had a box to show student growth, enrollment growth over the 2 years, which was really good because I think all but one was up pretty good. Do we then, like, look at this, if you got enough space, how do you determine if a campus has enough space per their students? Do you look at that too, or what's really the purpose of this? Why are we doing this every 2 years?
Thank you. For the record, Brody Leiser, Regent Del Carlo. I will provide a general response, and then if any of the institutions would like to chime in, ultimately the goal and purpose of this report is to try and identify institutional capital construction needs. So there's a lot of factors that can go into that. And as I look at the report, this is a very high-level report of square footage. And so it does tell a story in terms of how our institutions are either growing or eliminating space. And when we tie in enrollment numbers, those growth in enrollment or declines in enrollment will certainly have an indirect impact on facility needs across our campuses. Now, that is a very generic statement because there are a lot of factors that go into those figures. And I talked about the enrollment numbers and what they include, and they include dual and concurrent enrollment students. And so we can't simply look at enrollment with a narrow view. We've got to look at a bigger picture. Specifically, how the institutions use this information to develop their priorities. I would like to give them an opportunity to weigh in. And certainly if there is any thoughts or considerations to how we could improve this report, definitely open to any recommendations that the board may have.
Okay, so like President Heavey, you've been around probably the longest here. How do you use it? Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Regent Del Carlo. Chris Heavey, Interim President of UNLV, for the record. We are constantly monitoring our space conditions and trying to manage programmatic space and using that for the kind of vision that we're putting forward to the Regents about what kinds of capital projects that we're going to need. And so in terms of its use in this room, I'm not really sure about that in terms other than potentially the prioritization of projects related to additional space and understanding ratios of space to students, et cetera. On the campus, we're always actively evaluating space considerations. For example, as we put forth new programs, where are they going to live? Which programs are bursting at the seams, et cetera? And, you know, for our purposes, we are at the edges of what we can manage space-wise and are desperately in need, for example, of, you know, the new business building to give us surge space for other programs that we're adding as our enrollment continues to expand. So internally, we're using it very actively and evaluating on a continuous basis. You know, for you, I think it's maybe giving some broader context of how the campuses relate to each other.
Okay, and I know it in the past there was, I don't know if there was a report out there, maybe Brody you would know, or Chris, about the utilization of the classrooms, because it's Monday through Friday during business hours, you're slammed, and then Friday it drops down quite a bit, and then certainly hardly anything on the weekend. And I know the thought, I don't remember, were you on the board? We talked about that a long time ago on the board. You know, our students are different today, and they're busy working and having families and stuff, and maybe we should kind of think outside the box a little bit and be offering more things maybe on a Saturday or a Friday Saturday. I don't know. We talked about that.
Chair Brooks, if I may, again, Brody Leiser for the record, Regent Del Carlo, thank you for bringing up the points that you've made. My understanding is that we have not looked at reporting on utilization since COVID. This report itself is a legacy reporting tool that has carried over from the policy, and the purpose is to try and provide information to inform the board as you're setting your capital priorities for the upcoming biennium, which is why we typically do it at this meeting every 2 years. In talking with Chancellor McNair and hearing some of the points that you made and reviewing the report myself, we would absolutely be happy to take a look at this report and how the information is presented and try and revamp the report to potentially make it a more meaningful piece of information for the board. And if there's additional information that is of interest of the board that we could include, we would be happy to look at that.
Question. Oh, I had one more question. And so we just got the John Tulloch Business Building. It's a brand new building. This is the first academic year it's open. So who assigns all those codes? Who goes through and does that? Is that at the point where the architecture's involved or the building's up and then somebody goes through room by room to see how it codes up? I thought those codes were pretty fascinating, actually. I asked you about them before the meeting.
Thank you. Again, Regent Del Carlo, my understanding is that institutions themselves will assign the square footage. So for that particular building, UNR would have had involvement in assigning the areas based on the codes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. President Dalpy.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Just chiming in from exclusively the WNC perspective, because I know my colleagues have different uses of this report, but I'll have to be honest, I like the words legacy report that Vice Chancellor Leiser used, and I don't actually look at this report until it comes to the board. I think it's something that was derived under the old funding formula, maybe used there, but in our world, we are using, our space utilization is more
predicated on where we can fit classes, which roofs aren't leaking, which ones we're not updating today, and where we can move students from point A to point B based on our enrollment management strategies more than capacities blended into that. But this report does not necessarily guide that.
Thank you, President Dalby. Chancellor McNair.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Regent Del Carlo, I'm glad you asked that question. And Matt McNair, for the record, we actually had the same conversation as this came up since it's my first time through this as well. We are going to be evaluating this to see if you have to ask what story it tells, then it's not telling much of a story. So we will either change it so it tells a story that makes sense, or we may eliminate it. I don't know. We can probably come up with a better way of presenting the information that makes it useful, since I don't think as it is, it seems to be all that useful for people.
Thank you. I appreciate it, because there's got to be a lot of time that goes into some of this stuff, and I think we need to look at that kind of things. And then my colleague, Regent Carvalho, who's been on BFF for quite a long time, and I'm on ARSA at the same time, and I forgot that we have that space utilization report. Can you mention that?
May I say something?
Yeah, Regent.
Please do.
As Regent Del Carlo was mentioning this, there was a conversation in June of 2024 about the space utilization report at the BFF meeting. CFO Vitone would probably remember that. And we discussed the usefulness of that information and how it could be used in the future, but it hasn't come back before that committee or the board. I, from my perspective, I think it would be useful for us to understand where and how classroom spaces and other spaces on our campuses are used, so that we can understand the priority of our requests to the legislature. But I do agree with you that I think that there needs to be a deeper look into these reports. I mentioned to CFO Leiser before the meeting basically the same thing, that I don't think that this report tells the right story for us. So I appreciate you allowing me to chime in on this, Chair. Thank you.
Sure, Regent Carvalho. Was appropriate with the dialogue that Regent Del Carlo had started. We'll move to Regent Downs and then President Klippenstein.
Thank you, Chair. So I appreciate the report. I want to say I'm looking at the other screen here, the student enrollment totals. I think what might be more helpful is maybe the on-campus student enrollment totals, how that may have changed. That would kind of play into the utilization part of it. And I do recall, and someone can correct me on my historical knowledge here, that the space utilization report I thought was originally intended for the prior funding formula. And I thought that started like around 2012. And in 2013, we switched to the current funding formula. So my dates could be off there a little bit. But I will say, as someone who works in the system, the space utilization report, or because of that, at least my school, I know it's changed, President Dalby. You can correct me, but I know it's changed. But it was up until a year or two ago, to where we would leave classrooms just to get a better report. We would leave classrooms of 30 empty so that we could put 15 students in a 16-seat classroom. Why we leave the 30-seat classroom empty? Because it looked better on the report. Didn't really matter how effective learning, but it would look better on the report. And I know under President Dalpa, we've changed that policy, so and the way it's applied. But I would just caution that some of these reports could trigger certain reactions, so that they get a certain appearance on paper, regardless how it affects the classroom environment. Thank you.
Thank you, President Klippenstein.
Yeah, Chair Brooks, members of the board, Stacey Klippenstein for the record. Thank you very much. I concur with a lot of the items that were said. When I first looked at this report, it was helpful being a new president and understanding you have 1.18, whatever it is, 1.2 million roughly square feet of space, and its breakdown by what's leased and what's owned. That's very valuable in that context. But when you need to break it down and get more granular to really be able to utilize it in the right way. The other thing, too, is that I find that's very helpful with it is an understanding, but you need to be able to utilize this with the more granular look at space utilization, which classrooms are dark, which ones are lit at various different points in time during the week, weekend, or whatever else, as you mentioned, Regent Del Carlo. The other one, too, is the purpose behind this is you utilize this type of information and build better reports and understanding at each institution, but being able to utilize it for facilities master planning. And that's where CSN will be heading, hopefully sooner than later, because our facilities master plan is aged. It's time for us to really legitimately look both at deferred maintenance, how much square footage we have, how much is within the deferred maintenance category, what's dark, what's lit. All those things are very important to any facilities master planning. So on an annual basis, if this report was improved, you would have a really good, clear, broader understanding of that at a more granular level. So when all of a sudden a facilities master plan is in front of you have a good sense of what that looks like and what it means and the why behind why some buildings would say, no, let's renovate, let's get rid of, let's add new. Maybe we shouldn't add new because we can do this because there is space. So I just wanted to share that perspective from a CSN perspective and a new president perspective as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for our CFO specific to space utilization or the report? Regent Boylan.
Chair Brooks, thank you so much. Appreciate it. This is not specifically to the CFO, but I thought I would just mention what Regent Del Carlo mentioned about the usage of space on the weekends. The doctoral program in public policy, they do use Saturdays and Thursday, Friday evenings. That's just a shout out to them. But also, I agree with her totally. There's a lot of empty space that could be used for different programs. The other thing is to Regent, and I should call him Dr. Downs, but it's so important to have someone like him. I never knew about this thing about leaving empty spaces, you know, a 30-room classroom empty and this. Yeah, you've got to have some cohort agents in there that let us know these kind of things. And we should know them so we can use all this space and UFO stuff and all that stuff all together. So thank you, Dr. Downs. Thank you, Chair. I had to say something about that. It's been very interesting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move over to agenda item number 7. This is the 27-29 NCHI biannual budget request process and priorities. And I'll ask our CFO to lead us once again in this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Brooks.
Chair, I need to read my disclosure again.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Please do.
Regent Downs, we can't, I think your microphone may be off. We can't hear you.
Sorry about that. Pursuant to NRS Chapter 281A, I hereby disclose that I am an employee of WNC, an institute within the Nevada System of Higher Education. Because the independence of judgment of a reasonable person would not be materially affected by my situation, I will vote on this matter.
And there you have it. We're ready to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. Regents, again, Brody Leiser for the record. I will go through the agenda item 7, and I will tell you, here's a spoiler alert, this basically is the June presentation, so you're going to see this again with some minor changes in June, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But as you recall, at the April 17th meeting, we talked and presented on the state operating and general fund requests for the institutions. So the areas for discussion today, again, a very brief recap of the budget process timeline, which everyone is familiar with at this point. And then we'll get into the institution budget enhancement requests. There's a continued focus on those priority areas that have previously been identified by the board. That includes a fee waiver, small institution factor funding, and campus security. What we've done for today's presentation is given the number and priority areas for our campuses. We have grouped the requests by areas of focus for consideration to help present the information in a little bit more digestible format. And then we'll talk about direction for the June meeting. As I mentioned, the board will hear a very similar presentation in June, and the goal at that June meeting will be to set direction on priority areas. We can then take that direction and in coordination with our institutions, work to finalize the presentation material for the August 27th board meeting, where the board will take action to set the 2027-29 biennial budget priority for submission to the governor's finance office. And during that time, we'll be working with our colleagues across all institutions to be entering those budgetary requests into the state budgeting system. I am having a little difficulty with the button. Oh, there we go. So we have gone through this timeline several times, so I do not intend to spend much time here. We are about in the middle of that timeline with the meeting today to set the capital improvement priorities. One thing that's not on this slide, I did mention it earlier, but on August 26th, the Chancellor's Office, along with institution representatives, will present to the State Public Works Board on those capital improvement priorities that the board just approved. Operating priorities, again, this is information you have all seen before, that the budgetary requests are in alignment with the governor's three-year plan priorities, as well as being in alignment with a board's strategic plan with regards to student access, student success, closing performance gaps, meeting workforce needs. I do want to spend a little bit of time on this slide that will sort of outline today's presentation and sort of set us up as we start moving forward. The first bullet point that we have here talks about adequacy of funding. And what I want to talk about here, this has been a common theme since applied analysis came before this board in September of 2025 to talk about adequacy of funding and provided a presentation to the board. And what I would like to talk today about with regard to that is I know that there has been some interest by board members on what is going on, whether we're going to pursue anything with regards to work that was done by applied analysis on a funding formula model. And we have begun very initial discussions with applied analysis, and I appreciate the opportunity to come up to speed as I come on board. We do have a meeting scheduled on June 3rd, where we are going to meet with applied analysis, and when I say we, that includes the Chancellor's office, as well as our chief business officers and possibly some government relations folks from each of the institutions. We want to make sure that all of our campuses have an opportunity to pose questions to the applied analysis team to fully ensure that we understand the model as being proposed. And what I will tell you, I'll give you a very high-level recap of the model, and then we will have a slide at the June meeting to talk more about this funding model, and we'll continue to advance those discussions then as we get into August. But ultimately, the model looks at setting a proportionate split of funding due to the shared funding structure of higher education in this state, and looking at peer and aspirational institutions as to what those proportions look like between state investment, state general fund, as well as student-derived revenues in our institutions. That's our registration fees and non-resident tuition. So the model will look to see what the goal level of that proportionate funding split is, and that split may be different for our universities than our community colleges. It certainly could be different for Nevada State University than it could be for the University of Nevada, Reno, and the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. These are all the things that we're going to continue to talk through with applied analysis. But the other piece, the other general piece of the funding model proposal is to reach aspirational funding levels, to get that adequate funding level, and how, what is the goal or how do we reach that? And that's where we're looking to peer institutions and or aspirational institutions. You know, for example, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the University of Nevada, Reno, we will look to peer and aspirational R1 institutions and what levels of funding those institutions are receiving, both through state investment as well as the investment that our students make. And ultimately, the goal of that funding model would be to set what those aspirational funding levels are and what the right split of commitment is. And so that is a very high level summary of the direction that the funding model will go. I'm sure that you all have a lot of questions, as do I myself, and as do our campuses and institutions. I will repeat this one more time, that we are not going to ask our institutions to do anything different in their efforts to build their budget requests for the upcoming biennium. We know that it takes a lot of work for our campus staff to get that information into the state budgeting system, and we can move forward with each of the requests that have been proposed so far to build our budget in a manner consistent with the structure that was approved by the legislature, while at the same time have this parallel discussion about a new funding formula model. And we'll get into those details again as we move forward into June and August. So thank you for allowing me to take a little bit of time to talk about that, because I know that there's interest of the board. The next thing I do want to just make a point here is that one of the things that is very important to our institutions is the continuation of base funding components as well as caseload. I believe that our base funding to continue the ongoing operations of our campuses into the next biennium, that the general fund investment there will be probably about $1.8 billion in our base budget. It's a substantial investment of state funds into the system of higher education. And what I would also like to note is that we started looking at some preliminary numbers with caseload. I know caseload is a very important component of the budget for all our institutions. Right now, we don't have the final weighted student credit hours for the current academic year. We're close, and we're going to get those. Without those final numbers, I can't tell you what the caseload growth is going to be. What I will tell the body today is that based on preliminary projections, I believe that all of our institutions are going to see caseload growth, and that would generate additional general fund dollars. System-wide, I believe that we are looking at over $50 million a year in general fund appropriations directly related to the caseload calculation. Again, we need those final weighted student credit hours to give you a concrete number, but I believe that that's a conservative number across all seven of our instructional institutions. With that, we'll hit on the priority areas that I mentioned previously: small institution factor, funding, safety, security, fee waivers. And then, as I mentioned here, the last bullet on this page is we tried to group the requests by areas of focus. Please note that in this presentation, there is no recommended priority order. The things that we have in the initial slides are the things that this body has already indicated are a priority: small institution factor, security, fee waivers. Everything after that is not in a recommended priority order, so I just want to make that clear. So the first slide that we have here is the requested funding for related to the Native American and National Guard fee waivers. We've talked quite a bit about these fee waiver programs. These are statutory mandates, and these are the most applied waiver programs across our institutions. So the statutory references are there. I will just, again, I will repeat, I provided these numbers in April. We don't have the final numbers for the current academic year, but for academic year 24-25, $8.2 million in registration fees was waived across our institutions, and that was for over 1,800 students. And so we are seeing about a 20% growth with these waivers. And as you can see, the total requests for the upcoming biennium is about $22.8 million. I will note this is one of the slides that was revised, and so we did, we needed to flip the GBC numbers for Native American and National Guard. They are correct here on the screen, as well as correct a typographical error for the CSN total. The small institution factor, again, just as a recap for the board, there are some policy changes that were approved last session. Those policy changes including the threshold, the number of weighted student credit hours used for this calculation increased from 100,000 to 125,000 weighted student credit hours, meaning that once GBC or WNC gets to 125,000 weighted student credit hours, they would no longer receive this funding. The second policy change approved by the legislature is that the rate, the per credit hour rate, was increased, and now we'll have the HEPI rate applied to that rate every year ongoing. So as I just mentioned several minutes ago, I am anticipating growth in weighted student credit hours for all of our institutions. So what does that mean for GBC and WNC? If they're growing, if their weighted student credit hours are growing, they would see a decrease in the small institution factor. Had the small institution factor been funded at 100% for the current biennium, that's how it works. As the institution gets closer to that 125,000 weighted student credit hours, the small institution factor funding goes down. When we see that go down, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because it means those institutions are growing and they're getting additional general fund through the caseload decision unit. We should have the final numbers for this at the August meeting. One of the things that we talked about is last session, the policy changes that I talked about earlier, the net impacts from those policy changes were at 20%, funded at 20% in FY26 and 40% in FY27. So in the table here, the FY27 funding, that was at 40% of the net changes for GBC and WNC, and those figures to the far right on this slide, that's how much the institutions would have received had this been funded at 100% in the current biennium. The next slide, this board has talked about the public safety and security, and so we have the update from the April meeting. We've associated dollar figures with the institutional requests for each of these focus areas, and so you could see on this slide how the amounts break down by institution. These would fund things such as staffing, security camera upgrades, integrated surveillance, classroom safety, action plan preparedness, badging systems, door locks, and so on. When we get to this slide, so we just talked about the areas that the board has already indicated would be a priority. When we get to this slide, here's where we start breaking these down, the requests by focus area. So what's grouped here are requests that relate to student success and academic support. And you could see, and I'll touch about some of these individual requests, but I don't intend on going through every single one. So I will, they're grouped here, go on to facility and operations support. The first item on here is a request that actually was made last session. This was a bill that died in the final hours of the legislative session due to some challenges going on there as we approach sine die. And then O&M funding for new space for UNLV and UNR. The next set of focus area that we have is healthcare workforce development. And I want to talk a little bit about the increased course weight for nursing, allied health, and health professionals. As this body's aware, there's a taxonomy of clusters that are used to convert credit hours to weighted student credit hours. And the request here would be to increase the weight for the health cluster. What I want to note is that not all institutions specifically requested this enhancement. But this is an enhancement that if the board would like to pursue and move forward with, would have an impact on all institutions because all of our institutions have courses within this health cluster. And when spread across all seven of our instructional institutions, it's about a $74.6 million request over the biennium. I want to talk a little bit about graduate medical education. I believe that our universities listed here, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and University of Nevada, Reno, would be able to, if they were to receive direct appropriations, would be able to do wonderful things with graduate medical education through their medical schools. Typically, what I would note here is that graduate medical education has been funded by the state. In the past, that funding went through the governor's Office of Science, Technology, Science Innovation and Technology. But that program was moved to Nevada Medicaid last legislative session. And so in the event that the governor's budget does not recommend direct appropriations to our universities, there is a possibility that there could be a recommendation for graduate medical education, as has been done the last several biennia. And that is something that the board could consider providing support for, even though it would be outside of our budget. We'll clean up that College of Veterinary slide to probably say College of Veterinary Medicine, I believe. But other than that, we'll move on. We have another slide on healthcare workforce development. Similar to what I talked about with the increase in that weight for the health cluster, the continuation of the nursing expansion one shot here, we had individual institutions that asked for this to continue. What we've included on the slide here is a $20 million appropriation, which is consistent with each of the last two biennia of what the legislature appropriated to continue nursing expansion. One thing that I think we will want to discuss as we move to the June and August meeting is whether or not the board would want to consider prioritizing both a request to continue the nursing expansion one shot and an increase to the health cluster that's used for the weighted student credit hours, because there could be some perceived overlap into what that funding would ultimately be used for. And so that may be an area where the board may want to choose one or the other. I will tell you, as I mentioned, for the last two biennia, the legislature has appropriated $20 million. That's $10 million a year to support nursing expansion. The thought process and expectation is that once the expansion efforts are underway and we increase capacity, that increased capacity will generate additional weighted student credit hours that'll get picked up through the caseload and provide additional funding for our nursing programs at our institutions. The reason I say that is it becomes difficult when you go forward and request of the governor for, say, maybe a third biennium in a row for another one shot. And when we start asking for ongoing one shots, it's just something from a messaging standpoint. If this is a priority area for the board, I think we'll want to have some additional discussion on how we can move forward with that request and work with the governor's office to pursue that priority if the board has an interest specifically relating to nursing. And I do understand from my conversations with some of our campuses that our nursing programs can continue to use one-shot money to continue to build up our programs. And I think as long as we've got solid justification for doing that, we want to make that clear in our request and what that would lead to. The next slide here is the teacher pipeline and education workforce. I won't go too much into this slide. There is one thing that I do want to note, that we are working with Great Basin College. I know that there is some funding that they received through the incentivizing pathways for teacher expansion, as well as Nevada Teach. Some of these programs and teacher expansion programs, appropriations are made to the State Department of Education. And so as we move forward through the process, if these are programs that the appropriations are actually made to K-12 education, they won't be part of our budget requests. But we want to identify those and make sure that they are on our radar and on our list for the board to support in the event that the governor wants to make a recommendation to appropriate money, in this instance, to the State Department of Education for some of these teacher pipeline areas where our institutions receive subgrants of those appropriations. The next item is student access and affordability. Again, I just want to take an opportunity here. The second to last bullet, we've got a request from CSN related to the Silver State Opportunity Grant. While CSN has specifically identified a funding request due to the need that they are seeing at their institution, the board could consider a broader request here as this program serves other campuses within the system. And just for context, in the current biennium, we received a $5 million appropriation each year for the Silver State Opportunity Grant. For academic year 2025-26, the fully eligible cost of our students was $8.5 million. So had we had an appropriation of $8.5 million, that's what could have been awarded for students. But we were limited to $5 million. So as we talk about the Silver State Opportunity Grant, and we move into, again, June, and then August, this is an area that we will probably make it a more global request, not specific to one particular institution. Similarly, the Nevada Promise Scholarship is an area where I believe that the state could benefit from an increased investment of appropriations due to the demand and eligibility of students. But that program, those appropriations are made directly to the Nevada State Treasurer's Office, but again, an area outside of our budget that I believe the board would have support for and that we'll want to include as we finalize the budgetary recommendations and get closer to the fall and upcoming legislative session. Finally, there's the technology and digital initiatives. Not finally. See, I did it again. At least I'm consistent. Some technology and digital initiatives. And then we've got some specialized program and research areas. Again, here, the Knowledge Fund. We're going to start calling that the Knowledge Account. It historically was the Knowledge Fund, and there was a statutory change several years ago. We've got a request here specifically from UNR, but this is, as you all know, the Knowledge Account is administered by the Governor's Office of Economic Development, and that that program benefits University of Nevada, Reno, as well as University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and our Desert Research Institute. And so if this was something that was, again, had support from the board, because this would be an appropriation to GOED and not ENSHE, it's not something we would put in our budget, but there could be support from a broader context, and we will certainly keep this on the radar and continue to present the support for the Knowledge Account if that's the path that the board chooses to take. Here's some more specialized program research areas. I know I sound like a broken record, but same thing for the WIN funding. GOED program for workforce innovation for New Nevada. That money gets appropriated to GOED. We've got specific requests from GBC and CSN, but the board could consider broader support for that program. Again, it would be outside our budget, as that money would be appropriated to GOED. And then just the final slide here is a table format of those focus areas broken down by institution. And so with that, Chair Brooks, again, I will just repeat myself. You are going to see a very similar presentation at the June meeting. The board does not need to take action today. Could be an informational item, so there's no need to take action. What we would hope is that when we get to the June meeting, now that we've started to put some numbers together here, that when we get to the June meeting, that we get some direction from the board in terms of what priority areas may be at the top of the list, and then we will take that time between the June and August meeting to prepare material to bring back to this body for consideration on August 26th to finalize your budget priorities and recommendation to be submitted to the governor's office for the upcoming biennium. And with that, I have nothing else and would be happy to answer questions. Chair Brooks.
Thank you, CFO. We appreciate that. I just, it sounds like we may have some questions from Regent Boylan, but prior to getting to Regent Boylan, I just wanted to ask, just for clarification purposes in terms of timeline, when we were having the conversation specific to agenda item number 6, those items we needed to cover because should there be any substantial changes that the board wanted to make to any of that, you probably needed a little bit of time before they were submitted to State Public Works. When does that have to be, that particular item, when does that have to be submitted to State Public Works?
For the capital projects?
Yes.
In order for them to prepare their material for the August meetings, my understanding is June 1.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's my understanding also, and that's why we recognize that. Part of the reason we're assembled today was to make sure that we can go over that just in case there were any substantial changes to give your office enough time to make those changes and submit by June 1. This particular item is different in that it seems to me, and like you've pointed out, we have a little bit of time to take a look at this. And I say a little bit of time recognizing that the quarterly meeting is coming up quicker than I think some of us are anticipating. And so to your point, This could easily have been an information-only item so that we can just at least put this on our radar and start taking a look at things right now and be better prepared in June when we really have to make some of these decisions. So I appreciate the clarification and the difference between the two agenda items. And with that, I'll go to Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Chair Brooks, and I apologize for jumping the gun there. But I wanted to make sure that I asked this simple question. I kind of missed what you said about the veterinary school. So could you mention that again? And what exactly did you say? I think it was slide, I don't know, one of the slides of yours.
Yes, thank you, Regent Boylan. For the record, Brody Leiser.
Thank you.
On slide 13, the bullet that we have says College of Veterinary Funding. I just want to confirm, and I will work with UNR to make sure that that is titled correctly, or if that should be College of Veterinary Medicine, was my comment.
Okay, good. Thank you, because I was like, oh, my gosh, I just love dogs and animals. And is he changing things? And, you know, are we going to end up, you know, trying to fix robots or something in there? But that was good. I'm really interested in that. And secondly, I see a lot of things we're doing, and it looks to me like they're socialistic. If you're taking money from people who pay taxes and just give it away to people who don't pay taxes for whatever reason, and we have this T&M legal clinic. And I think I've asked about this before. I've tried to clear it up. And that's just money from taxpayers helping illegal aliens to get legal advice. And how much money was that again? I'm sorry, I missed that also. And why do we do that so often? And then we ask the students that we're going to raise your fees because we've got some of our pet programs that we like in there. Do you remember that? Or do you know which?
Regent Boylan, I will answer one of your questions. On slide 19, the budgetary request is $1 million for the upcoming biennium. Related to your other questions, I think I would defer to either counsel or the institution.
I knew you would, and I'm surprised that he didn't jump in and say, whoa, hey, I totally understand. And I apologize to legal because I know you were going to shoot me down.
Chair Brooks and Regent Boylan, yes, for the record, your special counsel, Chris Nielsen. Yeah, I mean, this agenda item really is focused on budget.
Yes,
so any questions related to any budgetary items, including the legal aid clinic, are certainly appropriate. But I think getting into the policy behind those programs is really not the purpose of this agenda item. So I would recommend that we stick to budget-related issues on this agenda item.
Thank you so much. And, you know, just as I blurted it out, I realized I'm like, oops, legal's going to get me. So thank you, Mr. Leader? Leiser,
yes.
Did I say it right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the I and the German that comes afterwards. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I'll just ask real quick if there's any other questions. I don't see any, and I just wanted to point out that, as discussed, the biggest reason this came forward for us today as a possible action and not an information only was, should there have been a regent maybe wanting to make some formal process or give formal direction, the board could have certainly had discussion about formal direction and applied that to the agenda item, which is why it's for possible action and not strictly information only. The board certainly doesn't have to take any action on this, but we'll go to Regent Del Carlo for a question.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. On slide 11, you mentioned CSN and GBC on the advisor ratio of 350-1 and the money they'd need to get there. So I'm just assuming, because the other five institutions that provide instruction aren't listed, that means they're all at 350-1. This is just one of my pet things on the board. I'm so happy when we put this in many years ago, and it just really drives student success if we can get those numbers right.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo, for the question. I appreciate the question, and thank you to all of our campus staff for providing me with this information in anticipation of the question. Based on the information that I have, none of our institutions are at the 350-1, and I will give you the ratios that were provided to me. For in no particular order, Truckee Meadows Community College provided a ratio of 455-1. The College of Southern Nevada provided a ratio of 631-1. Nevada State University, 461-1. Great Basin College, 480-1. University of Nevada, Reno, 365-1. Western Nevada College, 523-1. And I don't have UNLVs, and I apologize. President Heavey, I don't know if you know it. 318?
We are in compliance, 318-1. Yes.
So I misspoke. We have one institution that is under the ratio.
Okay, just to follow up to that then.
Beautiful.
So you've got 5,920 there. So shouldn't we list the others for the money to get everybody up to 350? I mean, shouldn't they all be listed then? Or are these just our two priorities?
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo, as I think of the proper way to respond. If that is a priority of this board, I think it would be appropriate to engage in conversations with the institutions. These two institutions specifically asked for funding for this purpose.
Okay.
And the others did not. And I don't want to speak on their behalf as to there could be various factors related to that, and so I would defer to those institutions to respond directly.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'm glad I asked the question, because this was one of our top five strategic goals when Chancellor Riley was here, and I just don't think the board's not has voted to get rid of this, but it's like really a stretch goal. I mean, I'm very proud of UNLV that you're at 318. And it really makes a difference, and all the national stats will tell you, if you can get the proper advising, kids get out in time and they take classes that they need, not things they don't need. I mean, it's really a key component of student success, which was one of our five strategic goals too. So that's why I'm asking. So thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo.
Mr. Chair, Kyle Dalby from Western Nevada College.
Thank you, President Dalby. Sure.
Respond? Thank you. I appreciate the conversation on this. We were at 351-1 or right about there, and then our rapid increase in enrollment, I think 2 years ago, to 17% threw off our ratio, and we had expected additional caseload funding to help support advisors because the ratio was off because of an enrollment increase. All of that funding did not come through, nor did the small institution factor. So if there's a way that we could submit a proposal to now add to this, we would like to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, President Dalby. And I think that's a great idea as we start to have these discussions. Again, this isn't anything that necessarily the board has to vote on in order for President Dalby to have something added to this. I think that would be great, and I think if there's other institutions that, given another opportunity, if they feel like there's something that they would like to add, I think that would make a lot of sense. And to Regent Del Carlo's point, this is really part of what the board has always looked at as student success. And advising is a big part of that, to make sure that students are on track with their course load and with anything else that they might need in terms of guidance, so that we're setting our system up to have students come in and frankly move out and hopefully into the Nevada economy as quickly as possible. Advising is a key role of that, and it's usually one of the reasons why students end up on a campus longer than they should. And so I don't think that could be understated, the importance of what you're talking about. And with that, I'll move to Regent Scarballo. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know our names. They do sound alike. I did want to ask about the Nevada Promise Scholarship. Is that something that should be on our priorities, or is that just automatically funded? How does that work?
For the record, Brody Leiser, thank you, Regent Carvalho. That program is administered by the State Treasurer's Office and funded through an appropriation. And I apologize, I'd have to pull up how much was appropriated for the current biennium, but the appropriation goes directly to the State Treasurer's Office as they administer that particular program. So that could be an area similar to the knowledge account or the WIN, the Workforce Innovation for New Nevada, where funding is appropriated to another state agency where the board could demonstrate its support, but it would be outside of our budget.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from board members? I do have one question for you. It's slide 8. It's the fee waivers. And the question really has to do with the conversation that's taking place with legislators. It looks to me like this is part of really the budget request. And at one time, we were having conversation that perhaps this shouldn't necessarily be part of the budget request, but the ask is, if we are going to have mandated anything that might be mandated in terms of waivers, that you know, hopefully the state can help pay for that rather than it coming through a budget request. And so I'm just wondering if there's any updates on those conversations, if there's some strategy to get those conversations in place, and what that looks like.
Specifically with regard to the waivers, you know, I know that there was discussions last session about the mandated waivers and funding, and there's also was some policy considerations specifically around the Native American fee waiver. To answer your question, I believe that we will continue to engage in conversations with the governor's office and the governor's finance office that about these mandated areas, in this case fee waivers, where there is an associated revenue loss for our institutions. And when you're talking about millions of dollars, it's not something that we can absorb or that our campuses can absorb. And so, you know, I think funding for it has to be within the budget process. But how we look at that, you know, or how it's funded, we can talk. We certainly have discussions about that. We absolutely will continue to have discussions, again, assuming that this continues to be a priority for the board, to have those discussions with the governor's finance office initially and then continue those discussions with legislative leadership. Because ultimately, the legislature put the policy in place. And so I think that I can tell you, two sessions ago when the 460,000-ish appropriation per year, which continued in the current biennium, when those appropriations were initially made, that was an indication that the legislative budget policy was to support those waivers. last session there was a funding limitation considerations. But to your point, yes, absolutely. We want to continue those discussions initially with the governor's office and then with legislative leadership.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And the only other thing I wanted to ask was, in the conversation we're having specific to budget requests, and I'm not sure, maybe it's a line item that falls under advising or some other area. I didn't see anything that would be supportive for the veteran service offices at our institutions and what funding for those programs might look like that are on campuses that are doing some fantastic work and the best that they can. But I would imagine that they could probably use some financial support.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. We will follow up that services office's funding as well as work with the institutions that didn't ask for funding specifically to the advisor ratios to gather information for both of those.
Thank you. Are there any other? It looks like Regent Downs has a question. Regent Downs?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So CFO, is it Lizer? Am I saying that correctly? But I had a question looking at this. Maybe I missed it. Is there anything in any of these requests for, especially for the CBA institutions, for salary increases that are required by our current board policy for any types of increases to go, I think, beyond $2,000, however the numbers kind of figured? There's supposed to be a request that goes to the legislature. I didn't see anything in here. Does that mean that no one intends to do that? Or does that mean that do they still have time to get it in? What can we take from that?
Thank you, Regent Downs. Again, for the record, Brody Leiser. You're right, there is a process, and I don't think I'm sharing anything that's confidential, but I believe the board will see a request along those lines specifically for Truckee Meadows Community College at the June meeting, at the quarterly June meeting. And you're absolutely right that if there is a collective bargaining agreement that has a fiscal impact, the institution is required to identify what that fiscal impact is when they bring that to the board, which TMCC will do at the June meeting. And then ultimately, if that agreement is approved, there needs to be a funding request submitted through the governor's office and ultimately to the legislature to fund that fiscal impact. Now, what I would also say is that those agreements are required to have non-appropriation clauses. And so while the agreements themselves can move forward with the process, ultimately, if the legislature does not provide additional appropriations specific to that fiscal impact, that portion of the agreement is not effective. And so I am not aware of other institutions bringing agreements forward. I don't want to suggest that we won't see any others. I will just tell you that TMCC is the only one that I know that's ready to go.
Can a request only go forward if a full agreement is reached, or could the institutions who are still in negotiations put forward the request? I mean, given that there is a timeline, there's a deadline to get that request in. Otherwise, they have to wait two more years before they can put forward such a request. Is it a reasonable thing that institutions who are in the process could also include that request now before the timeline expires?
And thank you. And I would have to go look at the policy itself to see if there's deadlines and timeframes set. But, you know, as we get closer, there may be deadlines within our handbook and that section or the PGM related to collective bargaining. And I apologize that I don't have that off the top of my head. But as we roll into the legislative session, the time is of the essence. And I know that was sort of a non-answer, but I will follow up with you on specific timeline requirements. And to your point, if there are other institutions that are in the process, you know, how much time do they have to get their agreements before the board and through the process.
And Regent Downs, this is Jimmy Martinez for the record.
What I'm asking is.
Jimmy Martinez for the record. I just wanted to jump in. I don't want to get too far off the agenda item topic and start talking specifically about the collective bargaining agreements, but the collective bargaining agreements, anything negotiated in those agreements is required to be ratified by both faculty and the board. So it would be inappropriate for anything to be brought forward to the board for inclusion before it's properly negotiated and agreed upon.
Okay, that was part of my question. Thank you for clarifying. Is that, could it be, does it have to wait for full ratification prior to being brought forward to the board? Because it just seems like then there could be an endless delay tactic by institutions. That's why, and I'm trying to be specific to this topic. I'm not trying to go off on a tangent, but the fact that there are deadlines to meet with the legislative requests, that do we need to keep that in mind so that the potential is still there for that to be requested? But if it has to go through the full adoption and ratification process, I mean, I guess that's a good way for certain groups to prevent the pay increases from ever occurring. So a lot of delay there. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Regent Downs. If there are no other, thank you very much. If there's no other questions from regents, then I'll, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. I just want to go back because you brought up the Native American, the fee waivers, not just for them, but I don't know if this is new business or if I can ask you now on that slide, I think it's 11, that there's 7 bullet points so we know what the cost would be if we had 350 to 1 on the advisors. I think we need to know that as a board because that is one of our strategic goals. And the board did set that policy back in, 2022, something like, say, 17, 18, 19, 20. It was before 22. I forgot what I was going to say. I don't remember. I'll have to get with you later on it. It just left. Okay, I think it's because it's time for lunch. Okay. Thank you.
All right, and
a bathroom break.
Sure. Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. So I'll pause just for a moment, just in case the body has an appetite to take any action on this. If not, then we'll move right into agenda item number 8. I'm sorry, President Klippenstein. It seems like I have not called on you in a timely manner. I apologize for that. I want to make sure that we get your comments and thoughts in on this as well.
Thank you very much, Chair Brooks. Stacey Klippenstein for the record. Carvalho and I, we were making eye contact on that one, so I'm glad she's sitting next to you. Thank you very much. I was just going to jump back real quick on the Veterans and Veterans Center. There is also, when you talk about certifying agents, and when you have, we have 1,600 veterans come through, and we have to certify them each semester, right? So we have to go through all the paperwork. There are advisors that help do that. We were behind on that ratio, but we're catching that back up. Why? Because of the fees that you approved in our academic success initiative fee that you approved back in January. We're able to take a portion of that and move it forward to hire 2 new advisors that would also be certifiers. So we're trying to make that move on the ratio. We have not just the broad ratio, we also have the veterans ratio of what we need to adhere to, and that's what we're trying to do. So we're using those funds, 2 new advisors, cross-trained to be able to do that to support our veterans.
Thank you, President Klippenstein. I know that each of our institutions are doing fantastic work with veterans, and I'm sure we'll continue to do so. Thank you very much, CFO Leiser, for the report. Clearly, there is some informal direction that the board has provided, and we look forward to taking a look at the new updated report request in June. And with that, we'll move on to agenda item number 8, which is new business. Are there any regents who would like to offer new business suggestions? Regent Breger.
Susan Breger, for the record. I'd like to not make this be a major
ordeal for anyone, but how would we find out in the easiest way, not a good word, but on the leases, like how long on some of them, or can they be worked in together? How many vacant, you know, how many vacant rooms are in the leases? But I'm not looking for someone to spend months and hours and all that. So if there's not an, I don't know if there's an easy way to do it, but I'd like to see how long we've had some, and maybe we need to look futuristically for other boards that they're not putting out all that money. It ends up being millions and millions of dollars, and that's why I'm a little concerned. Not for us, meaning we should look futuristically in how we either know we need a building in the future or we combine leases together when they expire. Or I can talk to you later.
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Brooks. New business would be a presentation on if we even have a policy on how future deferred maintenance is considered for new buildings. Because if there's not anything in policy or if there's no process, I'd like to see the board at a future meeting put some guardrails around all that so we don't get in this problem. I'll be long gone, but we got to talk about it.
Regent Downs.
Thank you. That was quick. Thank you, Chair. I would like to have a meeting or an agenda item at a future meeting to where we can just, it could be information only, it could be action, but we can have a discussion and kind of lay out the get a better understanding of what collective bargaining is at the institutions and what is being, oh, I say this in a nice way, presented in our name by the system presidents so that, I mean, we want them to make sure that they understand where we are, we understand where they are, and then faculty understands our position as well. So I'd like to have a time when we can have that discussion so that just put it all on the table so there's no secrets. When we have our perspective, they have their perspective, and there's no misinterpretations. I'll say it that way.
Sure. Regent Boylan.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I'd like to get a report on all the things like fee waivers, special programs, anything that shows how much it costs NSHE and which part of society it helps. And, you know, something like school to college, et cetera, those programs we have, they don't benefit all the students. So a report just showing a simple report and a discussion maybe for the next meeting. This is important to us to know where the money is going. These slow leaks become a hemorrhage. And then we ask students to, we're going to increase your fees. My second one, sir, is we discussed this a few years back. I'm giving you the background on it. And the fees that we charge students for the newspaper, I do believe that students don't need, I mean, we don't need to spend that kind of money and charge the students the $3 extra, I think it is. We don't print the stuff anymore. If we do, nobody handles that. That's why we have computers. So either we remove that fee altogether, I'd like to know how we could discuss that in the next meeting and how that affects us. And that goes out to the chancellor as well as to council. How does that affect us? And do we have any agreements or some things that we can and cannot do? That's all, Chair. I thank you very much for this.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo.
Sorry, but I remembered what I was going to say. and it's...
And welcome to the club.
Yeah, it's an age thing, I'm sure. It's that we got to make sure we're comparing everything properly on that advising because we do have an institution that uses faculty, which is fine, but it's a difference. They get a stipend, I do believe, at one of our community colleges for advising. So I want to make sure that that's understood when the report comes. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any additional new business. We'll move into agenda item number 9, which is public comment. Is there any public comment at GBC?
No public comment.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? SES, is there any public comment on the phone?
There's no callers at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Lunch is ready, and with that, we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you.